All right, good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all this evening to our first meeting for 2026. Welcome to everyone who is in the public gallery this evening on Monday the 19th of January 2026, and also to everyone who is watching along at home on YouTube. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. Could I please ask those members of the public who are here in the public gallery to ensure that your mobile phones are turned to silent or off, please? Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations of 2025. And under these, I'm required to advise you that A, an audio or audiovisual recording is being made of the meeting. B, all persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting. And C, language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. Now our staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you very much. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr. Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Mackey, Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Ms. Shakuti, and Manager of Environmental Services, Ms. Quinn, our Communications Officer, Mr. Heather, our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton, and we also have with us now Councillor Dean. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Richardson. We're on page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 22, held on the 15th of December 2025, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday, the 8th of January? Yep. On 2026 priorities and operational update. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor... Sorry? Oh, it was the 12th of January. Apologies, it's written incorrectly on this. It was the 12th of January on operational updates and 2026 priorities. We are now on page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No, thank you. And still on page two, transfer of agenda items. Is there any item a councillor would like to move from closed into open or open into closed session? Thank you very much. Takes us to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? If you do, please come forward and state your name and the suburb in which you live before asking your question. Good evening.
Mark Donnellan, Huntingfield. My questions do arise after reading the financial report on today's agenda, so if you don't want to take these questions, I'll understand. But I will put them. The Algona Road Shared Feasibility Study, a shared path feasibility study, has $50,000 budgeted and unspent. What external work is remaining on this and why is it not completed yet?
Mr. Mackey, are you able to assist us with that?
I can't fully assist on that, but I can take that on notice and provide a response.
Next question.
There's an item listed for AFL High Performance Centre, an unbudgeted expense of $300,000 on page 44. It was my understanding the council isn't paying for any part of the AFL High Performance Centre. What does this expense relate to?
I'll flick this to the CEO. We're in a slightly grey area because, as some councillors have just pointing out to me, technically you're not allowed to ask questions on items that are listed on the evening's agenda. We have made exceptions in the past, but CEO. Can you assist with that?
Thanks, I can help with that. So the AFL High Performance Centre project is being done on a cost recovery basis with the state. We have had an arrangement where our staff are sort of seconded technically into the state government to be able to fund their payroll and things like that. However, there has been a piece of time where that has not been cost recovered as yet, but that is something that we still need to address. So it's a timing issue.
Thank you. Final question. There's an item for streetlights and power of 130k. Don't private developers and TAS networks cover the cost of streetlights? How did this become an expense for council?
I'm looking at Mr. Mackey. Yeah. He's looking quizzical, so I'm not sure if that's a good thing.
No, I'll also have to take that one on notice.
Oh, and the CEO might be able to assist.
I can add some context, and we'll still take it on notice. So there's a mixed ownership model with the street lighting that we have across the municipal area. Some street lights are owned by the state government through TAS networks, and others are directly owned by us. There is responsibility from council for the electricity that powers those, and we have sought last year through a bulk procurement using local government across the state to get the best possible rates for the funding of power into those, so making sure that we're getting the best possible rate for that expenditure, but we'll take the detail answer on notice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward.
Good evening, Mayor and Councillors. I'm Chrissy Ford. I live in Tonic Hill Court. There's a proposal that, going on there for a multi-dwelling up the top of Adelong, on 16 Adelong. I've written to all of you. My question is, I've been on tenderhook since the 13th of December with the letter in my letterbox. How is it progressing, and when do we get a date of what will happen? And I'm very stressed by it, so yes.
Thank you. Ms Shikuti, could you assist us with this, please?
Yes, through you, Mayor, and I'm sorry to hear that it's causing distress for you. I can't answer that right now without looking into our system, but I will endeavour to reach out tomorrow to provide you with an update.
Thank you very much for listening. And there's other things that are sort of the traffic and the windy road. I just wish councillors would come on site and have a look.
Yep. So it's just for your information, it's not uncommon for councillors, if they feel that they need to, if they're not familiar with an area where there is a development application, for them to go and visit and have a look. And we know in the past that councillors have identified that they do that. So please be assured that that is the case.
Yeah. We have to invite you to come?
No, we can just...
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward.
Hello. Hi, Tamika Adkins from Oyster Cove, also representing Club. My questions tonight are around the motion that Ms. Georgina Kirkpatrick, moved in 2023 at the AGM. So at the 2023 AGM, Ms. Kirkpatrick moved a motion intended to discourage council from rejecting or disregarding consultancy reports that had been requested by council and commissioned by landlords solely because council did not agree with the consultant's recommendations. What action did council take in response to this AGM motion, and what was the final outcome?
Ms. Shikuti.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. I believe we provided a response to a similar question potentially in an agenda last year or maybe the year before. But in summary, we held a workshop with elected members and presented to them why technical reports are requested, including environmental reports, and why at times staff or planning staff may not be satisfied with a report, and it can be for various reasons. So there might be errors or incorrect methodology used, plans don't align, etc. So obviously in those instances we will ask for them to be amended. In the instance where we potentially disagree with the recommendation, the outcome there was that staff were to escalate that to the director, being myself, and then if needed the CEO to determine whether we should be requesting further information to address our concerns.
So that was 2023. So when was that workshop held?
It was, my recollection would have been that it was early in 2024, because we have to respond to notices of motion within a timely way. We have to bring them onto the agenda. So it was, all I could narrow it down to would be early 2024.
So it was actually October 2024, is my understanding, and I just wanted to hear whether that was right or not from Council.
Have to take that on notice. It potentially was later in the year.
The correspondence provided to Ms Kirkpatrick was October.
Okay.
So what was the reason for such a long delay? I mean, this was unanimously passed and we still don't know if the motion has been passed through council. So what was the actual outcome? Is it still being workshopped? Is it still just in thin air kind of thing? Has there anything been documented on it? Mrs Kirkpatrick's DA is still not approved, and I understand that's still going through, but I'm just wondering why it's taken 2 years to have a motion finalised or discarded.
Ms Shakuti.
Mayor, my understanding and recollection, and I can go back and look at the various correspondence and documentation on this, is that it is finalised.
There has been a motion passed through council that included her suggestion on the motion that she actually passed. So the motion passed through council at the AGM, so not through council, the motion passed by her that was unanimously supported by the floor has been workshopped. The outcome of the workshop was what? Is my question.
It should have come back to council because, I can't recall, and I'm looking around at my fellow councillors who look like they can't recall either. So we'll need to take that part of the question on notice to make sure that we have closed the loop on that, because as you're aware, under the Local Government Act, we need to report back on any motions that are passed at the AGM, as we have tonight on the agenda several.
We haven't seen anything, so that's hence the questions.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward.
Charles Biggins, Leslie Vale. Just following up from the last questions and also representing Club, Kingborough Land Users Body. Why did Council not engage with Georgina Kirkpatrick at any time during the 10 months between the December 2023 AGM and the October 2024 workshop to clarify the intent of the motion from the floor and to assist with any rewording that may follow?
Ms Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, I don't believe we felt it was necessary, but I'll have to take that on notice.
At the council meeting that followed the AGM in December 2023, it was articulated by councillors, including Councillor Antoli and others, that supported the intent of the motion, and assurance was sought that the mover of the motion would be consulted prior to or during the workshop process. Why hasn't a revised motion from the October 2024 workshop based on the intent of the 2023 AGM motion found its way to this chamber. It's been 15 months since the motion was workshopped and 25 months since the AGM motion was unanimously passed.
Ms. Shakuti. Through you, Mayor, as previously indicated, and I apologise, I can't recall the specific details of correspondence or dates of workshops, etc. We will take that on notice so that we can provide a comprehensive response.
Can I just add to that? I just double-checked with the CEO. You mentioned one of the questions that you asked was why hadn't Council returned a revised motion similar to the one that was brought by the member of the community to the chamber. It's not our responsibility to under the Act to do that. A motion that is passed in an AGM, we can't amend the wording of that motion to have it read differently, is the advice that I've received. So
that was the thank you, Mayor. That was the conversation at the December 2023 council meeting, the last council meeting for 2023, that those points, as you rightly said, were brought forward. That's why councillors sought assurance at that council meeting, and it's on record, that the mover of the motion would be consulted as council workshopped the intent of this motion. My final question: what confidence can Kingborough ratepayers have that their attendance at a council AGM, for which only ratepayers and residents can move motions from the floor or vote on a motion moved from the floor, and their subsequent participation in the legislative function of council's body corporate functions, is going to be acted on in a timely and effective manner?
Thank you for the question. Well, certainly we strive to ensure that we're meeting our statutory obligations as outlined in the Local Government Act. We have moved this year, following last year's AGM, very quickly within the first available meeting to provide a timetable of when the items that were raised at the AGM in December last year would be responded to, because some of those issues do take quite significant time to work through and provide advice, and it may be that there are workshops that are required so that councillors fully understand all the issues prior to voting on the motions that have been put forward. So we certainly do strive to do it in the most timely way that we can, but we also need to ensure that our staff are able to prioritise resources where they are needed, and as we know, we have been fairly stretched across the organisation over the last 12 to 18 months as matters have arisen in the planning area.
Thank you. Can Council please acknowledge that the optics of this are not good, that a motion moved unanimously at an AGM is then discussed at the following council meeting, and it's agreed upon that it will be workshopped, and then that workshop doesn't take place for almost 10 months, and then there's no correspondence with the mover, and a report from that workshop doesn't even find its way back to the chamber. The optics are not good, regardless of what legal minimum requirements you may have met. The optics are not good. Could we please, for the benefit of the community, have some acknowledgement, please?
We will check the flow of that motion through the council and through our processes, as Ms. Shakuti has said. If there has been a significant delay, I acknowledge that is not something that we would that I believe meets the sort of standards of service that the community would expect. So I'd be disappointed if it hadn't come back through here, but we will double check to ensure that we can provide some information, and I believe Ms Shakuti might have some because she's waving at me.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. I have just looked through our agenda items, and this is not on our published... I assume it's in our published report, but I'm looking at our internal systems, which indicate it would be in a published agenda report, that there was a report that went to council on this AGM motion, and that was on the 18th of December 2023. And in that report...
That is the council meeting that followed the AGM of 2023, where the councillors discussed the motion and agreed to take it to workshop. Yes, I'm fully aware of that. It went to workshop. There was no follow-up with the mover of the motion. There was no report back to the chamber.
Ms Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. The recommendation that report was that processes for application assessment, including review of proposed plans, be continued in the same manner, and the mover of the motion be advised of Council's decision. Now, my understanding is that there was a workshop to do so. The recommendation ended up being that there was a workshop to determine, review the process, and we would advise. And so that was deferred as well.
Ten months later.
Whether the report was, the recommendation was that it needed to come back to council or not.
So I think, so that we're all clear, this is becoming a back and forth, which is not the purpose of question time. I think so that we've all got some clarity and we have the facts before us before discussing this any further, then we will, as undertaken by Ms Shakuti, we will get this answered on notice, and then if you have any further questions in relation to it, we'd welcome those at a following council meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further discussions, questions?
Good evening, Joel Hodson Middleton. I have a question on notice from 20th October last year that hasn't been answered regarding a performance criteria within the LPS regarding building access to roads across a number of zones. I'm not sure if that's been put in with the consultant's work or if it's separate. Following on from that, while I'm waiting for an answer, I contacted Property Services at Parks and Wildlife Service, who are responsible for Crown Roads. They informed me there is a workaround, but it involves an owner purchasing the road effectively rather than a leasehold, as is currently acceptable. But I'm not sure what council's position on this is. I know a number of other councils have decided... The information I got from Property Services was that a number of other councils have decided to just ignore that performance criteria, and I'm not sure how that's possible in a legislated document. And I'm not sure what this council's opinion or what you're planning on doing regarding this.
Ms Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, so we are aware of this matter, and we did include some commentary in our report to the Planning Commission about this particular requirement and the complexity that it entails. So they are provisions of the state planning provisions. Council and the Planning Authority, we don't have, I suppose, direct influence of what is or is not in those planning provisions. We do provide feedback through the review process, which we have done, and I believe other councils have done so as well. What we are going to do, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, or we are planning to, is to liaise with other councils that have already implemented the Tasmanian Planning Scheme and have a discussion about how they are approaching this matter, and
also seeking some advice from the State Planning Office as well, so that we can provide our applicants and landowners some advice around how it could be applied or should be applied, and what Kingborough's thoughts are in terms of how we might be looking at that in future assessments, noting that we're not there yet and we do need to comply with the scheme as it is written. But we are endeavouring to find out some more information so that we can provide guidance.
How people are zoned will impact whether they can meet this criteria or not. The advice that I've seen and the advice that I've received from State Planning Office, the advice I've seen received from Property Services are very conflicting in nature. How do I have faith that what happens with zoning changes is not going to impact, you know, what I can currently do on my property as it stands, or what my neighbours can do, or if my neighbour purchases the land, if this is the path we have to take, my neighbour purchases the land and puts a boom gate up and no one can access it because they own the road. It's a pickle, and it's a pickle that can be solved through zoning currently. So I wonder if council's looking at the application of those zones and whether this obvious solution in rural living zone will fix this issue.
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, in terms of how we apply zones in the draft LPS, that's not a specific consideration that we are directed to consider in our decision or what are our recommendations to the TPC. I don't believe it is a direct consideration for the TPC either in their decision making. However, if that is presented as evidence at the hearings, it can be thought about in terms of the suitability of zoning.
No, I'll save that one.
Okay.
I'll hold off on my last question in case something pops up.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, please come forward.
Good evening. Alison Rogers, Tinderbox, also representing Kingborough Land Users Body. The first question is about bushfire mitigation. I've just come back from holidaying through Victoria and South Australia and saw firsthand some devastating situations and also the trepidation of people in surrounding areas that were on watch during the most recent Victorian fires. I think it's well documented now that we are at a risk here in Kingborough and indeed in other municipalities in Tasmania. And I think there's a little bit of confusion out there still, and so the reason why I'm asking it here is to have it on record in the meeting rather than people having to individually turn up at the council to ask the question in relation to what people can actually do on their own property at the moment to reduce fuel loads and hazards and to obviously mitigate their risk. Obviously, in the planning scheme, there are some exemptions in relation to what people can and can't do on their property in relation to the removal of vegetation to protect their home from any bushfire scenarios. And so I'm just wondering if the council maybe, because we're heading into another warm weekend and hopefully we get some more warm weather during this summer period, but I think there's quite a few of us that are holding our breath as well in terms of are we going to make it through this warm weather, because the reality is right now that if, you know, something was to start within the region, that it could be quite devastating. So is there something that the council can produce whether it's on your website or in some other thing, that can maybe clarify what people can actually do. And the reason why I'm asking that is that when we did attend a Cool Burning workshop recently with Jason Smith, you know, we came to, well, obviously this conclusion has been out there for a while, but the people in the actual workshop realised that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to reduce their hazard on their property at the moment. There are a lot of sticks, dead bark, everything on the ground. And, you know, one of the little comments that we made is that people need to pick up sticks for the next probably 10 or 20 years to actually reduce that risk. But then someone came back at me and said, but we can't pick up sticks, Alison, because we can't interrupt any habitat. So I just wanted to get clarity around that, because I think there is a little bit of misinformation out there in relation to what people can and can't do, and I think it would actually help people to be a little bit more proactive in that area to obviously protect everybody, if we could get some clarity around what can and can't be picked up and removed in order to protect people's homes from bushfire, please.
Thank you. So your suggestion of some sort of resource in relation to bushfire risks and how it relates to the planning scheme is already on our website. There's a fact sheet that's been up there for quite some time, and in the past when we've been asked this question in the chamber, we have directed people to have a look at that, because what that clearly says is that the zoning changes within the incoming planning scheme will not change the risk of bushfire and does not directly limit your ability to manage bushfire risk. But what I'm hearing from what you're saying is there's confusion as to how that actually translates on the ground.
Yes, correct.
For people. So that's something that we will need to look at to provide additional information so that we can ensure that what is available for people to do, they're aware of it. Ms. Shakuti, did you want to add anything to that?
Through you, Mayor, no, not specifically. I think it's better done in a thought through communication, so rather than answering on the spot, so that it's absolutely accurate, comprehensive and clear. So we'll take a look at that.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
And yeah, my question is irrespective of whether there is a zoning change, yep, or not, because we understand that. It's more just what can we do to be proactive as a community.
Yeah.
So my second question is related to that, in as far as what is council doing in relation to bushfire mitigation. We have seen a mayor of a nearby municipality in the news of recent times purporting to say that they are the most prepared municipality and the most proactive municipality in relation to bushfire mitigation and hazard reduction. So I'm just wondering, what is it that the Kingborough Council are actually doing to ensure that we have safe roads to escape should a situation arise, and also what's happening on Crown or council-owned land, not Crown, but council-owned land, but also in consultation with the government in relation to Crown land that is also in the municipality that may pose a risk?
Ms. Shakuti, would you like to give an overview of the programs that we have, which is quite extensive?
Through you, Mayor, I'll start with the first part of the question, which related to what we're doing in terms of preparedness. So first of all, we do have a lot of information on our website about what council's role is and how you can engage with us and different organisations about household preparedness or property preparedness. So wide-ranging scope of activities. We have participated in and delivered different programs around our municipality in all the different areas. In terms of running information sessions, usually that will involve having the TEFS, the SES there as well, and residents of the area can go along and attend and learn about what they can do for their property, as well as some really, you know, practical tips and, you know, provision of lists for example, what to have prepared in your home. We also participated in a really successful program called Sparking Conversations, which was in partnership with Hobart City, and that was a very successful program. And through that and other programs, residents were able to have their property assessed for risk, bushfire risk, and some tailored advice provided around what they can do to help. We're continuing with that programming, and we try to look at the different areas in our municipality that we try to target it to more vulnerable municipalities in terms of bushfire risk, but I suppose other risks too if we're doing it in terms of flood preparedness, etc. And we continue to partner with the key agencies and organisations to do that. Now, in terms of, I suppose, overall municipal preparedness in terms of infrastructure and roads, we maintain our roads to standard. In terms of our own land, we manage that in accordance with our requirements and risk to ensure that our own reserves are not posing an unreasonable or risk to our municipality, either being an ignition source or something that might contribute further to a bushfire in the area. And then we also, council itself is not the main fire agency. So there's three in Tasmania, but we do sit on various, I suppose, committees and formal forums where we are consulting with those agencies and align our planning according to the state fire risk planning.
So just to finish off on that, you're satisfied that your program in terms of your roads are at a point where if a fire was to break out this weekend, that road is not posing a risk in terms of branches and trees coming down over the road that are already hanging over the road?
Yep, Ms. Quinn.
It's unfortunately not reasonable to not have risk. So risk is something, of course, that we all know that we live with all the time. And so at council, as with most organisations, we're not aiming for no risk or safe. We're aiming to lessen risk. And that's what we do through our bushfire management program. So I definitely want to acknowledge that there is risk out there, and that is not something, as we know, as we've seen, as you say, in Victoria and other places, that we can mitigate, we can do what we can to build our resilience and prepare, yeah? So in terms of our road program, we've assessed risk across our road network and looked at where those evacuation routes are likely to be, and we're working through a program of works to reduce risk. But you can imagine that'll take a long time, a lot of resources. So the key message really in road usage is leave early. That is the state government's, the Tasmanian Fire Service's message is to leave early. It's not to wait until the road's on fire, because as you can imagine, that is way too late. So I really want to be clear that council's message is in line with the Tasmanian Fire Service, which is to leave early. Yeah.
And then my third question is in relation to the new markings at Kingston Beach, mm-hmm. the beautiful blue artwork on the roads. I was in Kingston Beach today. We've had a number of people that have approached us to indicate that it is wearing off already, even though it is a new application. And so I was down in Kingston Beach today to view that for myself. And they're right. We have blue stuff all the way up and down roads, in gutters, actually on the footpaths, and in gutters, in grates on gutters. And I have photographs if you want to see those. I know that some advice that got given on social media was that this epoxy resin product is safe and non-toxic and doesn't dissolve in water. However, these have made it to our drains and now will go out into our waterway. And I'm just wondering what research has been done that the council relied on in relation to this product in the waterway, and if a fish ingests it, what is it doing to our marine life? It's a foreign matter. I would assume that it would have some impact on marine life.
Mr. Mackey, are you able to assist us with that?
Thank you, through you, Mayor. I can't probably give you the depth of response that you're asking for there in terms of any impact on marine life. What I can confirm is the safety sheet is it's an inert recycled glass, so it has no toxic harm or otherwise to marine life or to any to the environment. I do acknowledge, and I walk down there routinely myself, that there is some residual glass fragments that are have made their way to the footpath. We've sent the street sweeper down there on a couple of occasions, and it's quite natural that it will shed some of that material as it settles in. I have also noticed there's a small section that probably needs repair, and I will also commit to sending down the crews again to remove any of the residual stuff off the footpaths.
Can I just add to that? We have used this product before, but it's because it hasn't been in blue. It's, I guess, not as obvious where it is, but a section of road that we used it on is on the corner of Maranoa Road up there near Calvin School, because in wet weather, because of the slope of the road, when we redid it, we applied that OmniGrip surface to that because it does provide an added level of safety in terms of if cars need to stop suddenly, there's less skidding, and because, like Kingston Beach, that is an area where there are vulnerable road users, young students from the school, and so we trialled it up there and that has been very successful. It did have stuff that came off the top as well, but because it was not blue, I guess it wasn't so obvious, but as Mr. Mackey said, we're continuing to watch to ensure that it's in a fit state.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Please come forward.
Jamie King, Tinderbox. March 2023, I think the Melbourne University submitted a report to council stating that there was 35 kilometres of extreme fire risk road in Kingborough. So my question is, in council's mind, is that an acceptable risk?
The CEO.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the question. Look, we'll need to go back and have a look at that report, exactly what it says and what risk mitigation that we may have done around those particular roads. As was alluded to in the answer to a previous question, some risk is always going to be inherent in the environment, and so it's about managing that as practically as we can, but also working with our community to make sure that where it's no longer practical to bring that risk level down any further, that we are communicating well about how people should be prepared, and as was said earlier, leave early, not wait for that risk to fully materialise if the worst case scenario of a fire occurred. Now, that's not directly answering your question, I acknowledge that, but we need to go back and have a look at that material, so we'll do that.
I guess somewhat of a managed retreat.
Sorry, is that that's not a question, that's common?
Yeah, that we should retreat well before the roads become inaccessible.
Well, that is the advice that the TFS gives and asks all local governments to ensure that they continue to repeat that, because there have been instances in fire... fires around Australia where people unfortunately haven't done that and then they can't get out. So that is very much a message that in terms of advising our communities, it is, you know, act faster rather than try and stay and protect your property so that you know that you can get out safely.
I guess my last question would be, with a massive influx of tourists, especially to places like Brilliant, in the case of emergency, what would those people do?
Mr. Cootie. Through you, Mayor, they would follow the instructions and advice issued by SES Tasmania, and they could evacuate to either somewhere else than where they're visiting if there's high risk, and or to an evacuation centre, which would be established if council were directed to do so in the event of a fire and it was deemed necessary.
Sorry, just to go a little bit further, if we had 5,000 homemakers, shack owners on Bruny Island and 5,000 tourists, and there's three ferries operating and the fire's heading towards a ferry terminal, what would those people do?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Council, so this is probably questions better directed at the TFS or the fire agencies who are responsible for fire risk management in Tasmania, and would have, I assume, or would expect, have thought through these different scenarios. So the advice that I could give is that, is what we're told, is that, to repeat, as the Mayor said, that evacuate early. There are evacuation centres. I imagine the TFS and SES would be liaising, with your example, with the ferry operators, etc., in the event of emergency. So we're not in a position where we can comment in detail on what would happen in that event.
If I can just add to that, just to be clear what our role is during such an event such as a fire in Bruny Island, we are not the first responding agency. We are a partner in those events, and we take our direction from the incident control team that would be set up, which would be a multi-jurisdictional one across the various agencies. I do know that following the Dunalley bushfires many years ago, that there were a lot of learnings from that as to how to evacuate people where the roads are cut off, and they had some rather unusual circumstances during that event where a well-meaning local boat operator took some residents to rescue them and took them to his home and fed them and did all what he thought was the right things, but for a while they were all regarded as missing. So there are a range of protocols in place now to try and deal with things in a way that the safety of everybody is directed by a central agency, and so all those people who want to help in a situation like that should, you know, take their direction from there, as we do with when we open. We're directed by the statewide command then to when to offer our evacuation centres for local residents, so we're very much a partner in those sort of emergency situations, but it needs a central control. Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward.
Harry Hale from Pearson's Point. I've been working down at Kettering for quite a while, and prior to Christmas and after Christmas, there's noticeably a big line of cars waiting to get on the ferry, and they come all the way back onto the highway, and they come right up past where the church and the cemetery are. And when you're coming down to Kettering with that situation, there are some cars obviously in the queue that are wanting to get on the ferry, but there are also quite a few that want to continue on to Woodbridge or whatever. I'm just asking, is council aware of this situation? And I would also say that the local policeman down there was trying to help out by having his lights flashing, and coming along in a northerly direction, stopping at each car and suggesting to them that if they were going on the ferry, would they please move over as far as they could to the left, allowing other cars to get past and carry on. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this is a council problem to solve or whether it's state government.
Yep.
So something needs to happen.
Yep. So we're very well aware of that issue, and I think probably all of us around this table have been caught in that, either in the queue ourselves on the way to Bruni or trying to get through to other parts of the channel, and it is very, very difficult around the peak holidays, particularly around, I know, Easter and Australia Day are two particular points that cause concern. It is the responsibility of the Department of State Growth to manage that, and we have raised this issue with them numerous times because of the safety concerns about then people overtaking in an unsafe way in order to get past the queue. And I've had discussions in the past with our local police inspector, and I know he's well aware of it, and so staff who have been under his control have tried to assist the situation. I know that when the new ferries were put on a few years ago, that as part of the discussions around that, that we did plead with the Department of State Growth to try and come up with an alternative to that, because it is a traffic hazard, I would call it. So we can raise this issue again through our Director of Engineering Services, because I know that it does frustrate many people in the community who perhaps aren't using the ferry but need to get home. So we will raise that again with them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Please come forward.
Good evening, Marcus Redeker from Howden. I've got a couple of very simple questions regarding the zoning, upcoming zoning.
I'm not sure there is a simple question about the zoning, but keep going, you might surprise us.
I'll keep it as simple as I can. It's been mentioned previously at meetings here and most recently on the no compulsory landscape conservation zoning in Kingborough website, some suggestion of a percentage either for or against the LCZ zoning. I was hoping that Council would be able to advise formally of the correct percentages to clarify these comments, preferably without taking into account that people did not make representations due to more than likely not knowing about the problem.
So, I just want to clarify what you're asking. Are you saying based on the submissions that we received that then went to the TPC, what percentage were in favour and what percentage were against a certain element of it? I'm not...
Yes, that would do. That would do well.
Ms Shikuti.
Through you, Mayor, we would have to take that on notice. Our Section 35F report does detail the different representations received and what they, the varying views of those. So you could glean from that, I suppose, an overall or indicative percentage. But I don't have those numbers in front of me. And I suppose the other point is that if someone did not make a community members didn't make a representation, then we then don't have that data to be able to inform a percentage.
I was hoping not 700.
We'd have to take that on notice.
Okay, thank you.
There is a summary contained in that document from memory.
Okay.
That is available in the council agenda, but we'll confirm that in the answer to the question.
Thank you. And my second and other easy question, I'm interested in any feedback on the progression of our newly appointed independent advisers, if there is any.
Who would like this? CEO.
I can start, and our relevant director might pick up from it. So there's two different consultants that we appointed, one who's reviewing the allocation of landscape conservation zone across the municipal area, and the other one who's looking into the specific area plans for Bruny Island and the Bonnet Hill and Blackmans Bay Bluff areas. So we brought on the LCZ consultant more rapidly because we just were able to move through the contracting process with them. So they are underway and have been reviewing all the materials, the submissions that we've received through the exhibition process, the materials relating to any hearings that have happened so far, and are coming up with, I guess, the roadmap for how we will look at the allocation of zoning to the properties that had previously been indicated that may be landscape conservation. Ms. Shigeti might pick up with more detail about exactly where they're at. I guess in regard to that one, well, in regard to both consultants, the original indicative timeline that we provided to the Tasmanian Planning Commission of the 30th of January is rapidly approaching, and we have undertaken to make sure that we go through a thorough process with council as well to make sure our councillors receive that material and can approve it before it goes back to the TPC. So we've spoken to both our consultants as well as the Planning Commission to indicate that we would quite like a little bit of extra time to be able to fully make sure that we do a thorough job in both of those reports. They have indicated a willingness to work with us on that. So we are just working through the time frame so that we can be really clear about what a good process looks like from here, how it can get back past our elected members as the Planning Authority and then be returned to the Planning Commission. We don't want to take too long on that. No one wants to string this out any longer than it needs to be, but at the same time we want to make sure it's a thorough and robust process. So we're doing that this week. We intend to write to the Commission this week providing an indication of that timeline, and then we'll be able to publicly communicate it post their acceptance of that.
Ms. Shikati, anything to add?
What I can add is we don't believe that it'll be a significant extension or delay. As the CEO said, we want this to continue to progress and we're working very hard for that to happen. In terms of the LCZ review, significant progress has been made, including the review of the methodology used by council to in drafting the draft LPS, and as well as formulating recommendations about how each property or area of land within the municipality should be considered in terms of landscape conservation zone, potentially rural living or other applicable zones, and we're planning a workshop with councillors to present that before proceeding further, so that when that exercise is done in terms of evaluating the properties, councillors and elected members clearly understand how that will be done, and we will have feedback to refine that model as well.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any further questions, please come forward. Thank you. We'll move on then. We've got questions. Oh,
can I speak in?
Oh, sure.
I'll be quick, I promise. The Silver Water Park, Joel Hodson, Middleton. The Silver Water Park redevelopment at Woodbridge has been really, really well received by the public, and it's great. Part of the old structure there, the old picnic structure, had a windbreak, I guess. And the new structure doesn't, and it gets super windy there. Is there any possibility council can potentially install either a vegetation screen or something to assist with stopping the wind, along with a couple of bench seats up in the playground?
Mr. Smee. I like the way you just threw in the bench seats to add.
I will refer that to our urban design officer for comment.
In other words, we'll take that on notice. Thank you very much. If Any further questions? Please come forward.
Yeah, Richard Woolley, Lower Snug. My question is to the Chamber. Do you councillors, as representatives of the people, prioritise your decision making, in view of the people, or are you there to support and defend some of the advice that you get from the staff?
Okay, that's a very broad question,
and I can only
answer on behalf of, I guess, generally how I believe that as elected representatives that we go about our decision making, and I guess it's not dissimilar to the way we would make decisions if we're based in other positions, whether that be the CEO of an organisation who's answerable to a board, or as a board member, or any range of scenarios you can think of, and that is with the facts presented, all the information that's available, putting various lenses over it. I guess the different the difference for council is that we can't make decisions around this table that are in complete opposition to the roles that we need to fulfil as an organisation under the statutory requirements that we have, which are a lot. If you go through all the different obligations that council has to meet, the statutory obligations, it is a significant amount. So there are a lot of things, such as the meeting procedures regulations, that dictate how it is that we make that we are to make decisions, and the Local Government Act, where it talks about things like having an open mind when it comes to decisions, not having a predetermined outcome when you come along as a planning authority, for example, and we sit as a planning authority. So, that's a broad response, and I'm aware that that club have invited councillors to come along to a meeting on the 29th of January to actually, and as it's my understanding that that's one of the questions that will be put to us is, what do we consider when making decisions? And we certainly, I can't speak on behalf of everyone who sits around this table, and there are different ways of answering that question, and we look forward to those who can attend to be able to do that. But we don't have the capacity within question time here to go around with every single councillor answering that question. So I've given you
my second question then would be, as mayor, you do represent everyone around this table, and the answer that you've just given me is very similar to the answer I got in the last question I asked at the previous meeting, which was basically that the legislation says you have to do this, that and the other. And I've also heard you state that you've done everything to the minimum legislation requirements, and I'd like to think that as mayor and councillors you might be able to do a little bit more than the minimum.
I do recall that conversation, and I didn't say we did the minimum. I said we met the minimum, and in many occasions we exceeded it. So, for example, with all the consultation that we went through, I'm just trying to think back now, the end of the year before last, we did a whole range of public drop-in sessions that we were not mandatory. They were outside of the legislative process. We ran those in various locations around Kingborough, including over on Bruny Island, to ensure that the community had additional say. I also didn't... You're slightly misunderstanding my role as mayor. I am one vote around the table of 10 councillors. I don't get any more votes on any issue other than the same equal one as everybody else here. My role as council, as mayor, is to be the spokesperson for council, to chair council meetings, and to be the leader in the community. But it doesn't mean that I have any more persuasive powers over my colleagues or any greater ability to influence the way that they vote, because that's the... I'm taking that inference from your question that you're suggesting that I should be able to change the course of something based on my position. I apologise if that's not what you're intending, but that's how I took that question.
Well, my third question then would be along the lines of the hierarchy and how the system works, because my understanding is that as elected representatives, the people elect you to, through your councillors, oversee the general manager, the CEO and the staff. And the vibe that I'm picking up, and I think as a community we are all picking up, is that the view of the people takes second standard to what the staff are advising you. So we just like to, I think the community would like to see a little bit more defence and representation to the people,
yep.
If you understand what I'm trying to say.
I understand what you're saying, but can I just clarify? The Local Government Act says that the only staff that the councillors are, I'm trying to think how to express it. The CEO is the only staff member that the councillors have anything to do with overseeing. The other staff, all of the other 200 or so staff, are the responsibility of the CEO. Councillors under the Local Government Act cannot direct staff. That is specifically within the Act. But the staff are there to give councillors the professional and technical advice that we don't have. There is nobody around this table who, for example, if you want to take the planning issue, because that's what the majority of you are interested in, there are none of us as councillors at this point. We have one councillor who is studying planning, but there are none of us who have qualifications in the Tasmanian planning scheme or are qualified planners. So we are reliant on being provided with that advice, and in fact the TPC, through the whole process that is legislated, demand that when documents go before them that any recommendations are backed up by technical advice. So we are reliant on being able to receive advice from our staff and passing that on, because everything that goes before the TPC has to be justified across a whole range of policies and provisions under the Act. So there is a role for staff in providing advice to councillors, and we have to take that and weigh it up. And we also do, and yes, we are answerable to the community, absolutely. And we are all very aware of that. But one thing that you need to know is it's really hard sometimes within the legislative framework that we operate within to do things in a particular way when you know the community don't want it. And planning applications are a very good example, where we've had occasions when we've had individual development applications come before the chamber, and we might have had 40 or 50 representations where people in the community say, we don't want this, we don't like this because of X, Y or Z. And unless we can demonstrate that those things that the community doesn't like about it are things that are contained in the state planning scheme, then we are compelled to vote for that application that might be coming before the chamber, because otherwise it will be appealed by the applicant, because we wouldn't be arguing on a point of law, if you like. It would be appealed by the applicant, and then we would lose the appeal and have to pay the costs. And there have been a couple of occasions over the last 10 or 12 years that I can think of where perhaps that has happened, and it's a very costly exercise. So we are constrained in many ways in the way that we operate, and we strive at all times. I can say that for everyone around this table. We strive at all times to do the best for our community, sometimes the system in which we operate can let us down, and it's a frustration for us, and it is also a frustration for our staff, because there are things in the planning scheme that they don't agree with either. But they're there, and we can't change that. And I know that there are people within the state government at the moment, members of state government, who are starting to think maybe the way that the Tasmanian planning scheme has been written is, you know, not helpful in situations like the one that we're facing here at the moment with the LCZ. Thank you. What was that? I didn't hear the last comment.
My questions are on social response.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? For the record, everything that we say at council meetings is on record. All right. Okay. Page 2, questions on notice from the public. We have 4, publication of consultants' report from Ms Anderson with a response from Ms Shakuti. Question about consultants from Mr Taskunas with a response from Ms Shakuti. Question from Mr Dinellan about lost property with a response from Mr Smee. A question from Mr Rowan with a response from Ms Shakuti in relation to property values. And if anyone does wish to submit a question on notice, they can do so by completing the form on the website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Page 4 we're on to now, questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question on notice? Without notice, sorry. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. First question is about digitising annual reports and distribution to the Kingston Library. Do we submit our annual reports to libraries, and are we digitising older annual reports, though that is those pre-2020, to put on the Kingborough Council website?
Mr CEO. Sorry, I couldn't even say that for a minute there.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. So, yes, we do provide our annual reports through to State Archives. And whilst my understanding is there are some annual reports back in time that haven't been digitised yet, that's a piece of work that we would need to undertake to make sure that they're fully digitised and put on file. It's something that is a project we need to do. It's one of these ones that's probably not the highest priority in the day-to-day operations of the organisation, but it's one that sits in the backlog.
Further question, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This next question is about rural roads. There are 2 questions here. The first one is, has Council applied for the Natural Disaster Risk Reduction Grants Program for upgrades to Van Moy Road, Margate, to ensure that emergency service vehicles and machinery can get to the top of Van Moy Road and have the space to turn around there?
Ms Shakuti.
Sorry, through you, Mayor. No, I don't believe that is the case. And in terms of whether we would apply for specific roads would be determined by, an assessment of which roads potentially need that more than others, and also potentially in consultation with the TFS as well. It's not something council would independently just pursue for a specific road without a robust consideration of whether it's required.
Through you, Mayor. Penultimate question. Has the Kingborough Council taken ownership of the State Growth Road? Or the question is about the ownership of Sandfly Road and the old Huon Highway below Ferntree. Basically, the question is that road Kingborough Road or is it State Growth? And when roads like that are transferred from state government to Kingborough Council, is that done from a decision made by councillors or is that a determination made by management? And I think the underlying question here is about cost shifting. It obviously matters a lot to council whether we have to take on state growth responsibilities for roads because then we have to maintain them.
Mr Mackey.
Through you, Mayor. Thanks for the question. Did a little bit of research on that this afternoon. To the best of our understanding, both those roads were transferred to council in the around the 1980s. We don't have any records confirming the exact dates. And I guess without that documentation, we can't determine whether or not it was accepted by a council resolution or not. In terms of the process, I'd have to take that on further notice to understand what that process looks like around you know, taking on state-owned roads, or conversely, us actually transferring roads to state-owned.
I think we'd be all for us transferring roads to the state government, considering we have 557 kilometres of council roads.
This last question is, well, a set of questions really, bushfire risk mitigation. So according to the recent climate change, this is the Climate Council, they recently released a report, When Cities Burn, and one of the highlights there was that in Australia up to 90% of the homes in high risk zones were built before modern bushfire resilient building standards, BEL ratings and the like, which increases ember ignition and house to house a fire spread risk. So my questions on this are, is the council aware of how many buildings in Kingborough, on Kingborough's urban fringe, are built before bushfire resilient building standards were introduced? And really the question is, how might this impact emergency services response in the event of bushfire? Is older building stock a factor that emergency services are going to take into account when they're working on bushfire planning, preparedness and emergency access and water supply considerations?
I suspect the answer to the first part of your question is no, we wouldn't know BEL ratings prior to that system coming in, but Ms Shakuti, I'm sure, can assist.
Through you, Mayor. No, we don't know the proportion of houses prior to and after that being requirement for building standards. Also, we'd have to define what urban fringe was to be able to do that. In terms of fire planning, that's a matter that the TFS would need to answer. We can't sort of answer that on their behalf, so would suggest contacting them directly. Also, in relation to the age of a house, in terms of its risk, really what is probably more important is the materials that it's built out of, if the property has been prepared and the building itself for fire preparedness, as well as, you know, its location in the landscape, surrounding land uses, etc. So it's really probably not a very good indicator of risk, but I couldn't tell you whether it's considered in fire response planning or not.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A question regarding the Huntingfield housing development. Wondering any updates in regards to the cat management as part of the subdivision? If there's been any changes or updates?
No. Ms Shakuti.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Yes, there has been. It's quite a complicated background, and Ms Quinn might correct me if I'm wrong here with some part of my response. There were conditions both in the DA and also the EPBC approval, contained approval conditions for the development. Then one of those controls was that it was there were, the restriction was to be placed on the titles. Now, that has evolved because of the new legislation or updates to the Rental Act. I believe it's the Rental Act around
Residential Tenancy Act.
Thank you very much. pet ownership, and we've had advice that those conditions on the title needed to be adjusted to ensure compliance alignment with that act. So there are still restrictions on cat ownership in Huntingfield, and it's being aligned directly with the approval condition in the EPBC in that cats must be contained to a satisfactory, in line with satisfactory, I suppose, standards of what is, I suppose, contemporary cat containment measures that at a dwelling.
That's probably
any further questions? Further question?
Yes,
Councillor Mosley.
Thank you. Just related to that. So do we still have a cat management officer being able to oversee the future subdivision and yeah, the cat containment in that area?
Ms Shakoudi.
Through you, Mayor, we still have a... That is still an accountability within our natural areas and biodiversity team, and we're looking at what that resourcing looks like, and it will likely be part of a position alongside with some other natural area responsibilities as well.
Further questions? Otherwise, we will move on. We've got a fair bit to get through on the agenda. So we are. There were no questions on notice from councillors. So open session of council now adjourns, and the planning authority commences at 6:50 p.m. Officers' reports to planning authority are on page 5. Item 12.1: request for consent to build outside the building envelope on CT 179428-5 at 14E Bonnievale Drive, Howden, with a recommendation on page 9. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. And a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So I understand the proponents want to build a shed and that approximately 30 metres squared of the shed will be outside of the footprint, or it will protrude outside of the building area of the lot. So they have been advised that they could seek consent from council to do so. I just wanted to find out what the difference is between seeking consent and then putting in a development application. If we grant consent, does that then become part of the development application, or how does that work?
Ms Shakoudi.
Through you, Mayor. No, the consent is simply to grant consent to build outside of the building envelope. That will then allow the development application to progress and be assessed.
Okay, but it's not guaranteed.
Deputy Mayor.
So it's not guaranteed. The application will still have to go through the normal process and will receive representations.
Ms Shakoudi.
Through you, Mayor. I've been advised that the application will be discretionary, so yes, so it will then have to meet the relevant performance criteria or acceptable solutions in the planning scheme as well for it to be approved.
Deputy Mayor.
So it looks like we are being proactive and trying to come up with a solution with the proponents, given there's an issue with their proposal.
Ms Shakoudi.
Through you, Mayor, I would say yes, that is the case. It has been through some iterations where consent couldn't be given to have the development occur over council land, and this sort of resulting revised plan keeps the development on the property title and not going over council land, but therefore then does require, it does then go outside of the building envelope.
Deputy Mayor.
I am happy to support the recommendation. I'm also very interested to hear what the neighbours have to say, so I'm glad that it's going through a process. But it's also good to see that we are trying to work with proponents on how to, you know, come up with solutions when these issues arise.
Any further contribution? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Quick question about stormwater and potential impact of the building going beyond the building envelope as prescribed. Please, can we just describe what the impacts of stormwater and overflow pathways might be? Is there erosion risk or impacts on adjoining land or the road reserve from stormwater?
Ms Shakoudi.
Through you, Mayor, I can't tell you specifically. However, the DA process will look at the stormwater design and plans and any potential impacts in accordance with what we're required to do, assess under the scheme. So while the consent, if granted tonight, per my answer to the Deputy Mayor, there will be a full assessment of the application in accordance with the scheme.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. And so I'll be supporting this. The thing that gives me some comfort is the fact that of the topography of that particular site means that if the shed wasn't to go somewhat outside the building envelope, then it would necessitate sitting higher in the landscape, which would cause some visual impact and amenity reduction for the neighbours. So I think this is a better solution than the alternative, and so on that basis I'm willing to support it. Thanks.
Any further discussion? Deputy Mayor, you don't want to sum up? Okay, I'll put the recommendation. It's moved by the Deputy Mayor and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Planning Authority now adjourns at 6:55 p.m. and open session of Council recommences at 6:55 p.m. Takes us to page 35, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition curbside collection Leslie Vale will be provided to a future Council meeting. On the same page, at the time the agenda was compiled, no further petitions had been received. Now takes us to item 15.1, AGM motion response. This one is in relation to the review and withdrawal of Council's biodiversity offset policy for the recommendation on page 39. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, ma'am. The recommendation here is that the biodiversity offset policy is reviewed in accordance with the current review schedule, which is November of 2027. The next review of the biodiversity offset policy in 2027 includes community consultation in accordance with Council's communication and engagement framework. Critically, all across the country there are biodiversity offset policies. In many places they are far more stringent and I would say therefore far more effective. The reality is when it comes to biodiversity offset is supposed to be a last resort. So where, in terms of a mitigation hierarchy, you can see that listed on page 36. We in Kingborough have the privilege of being custodians over or stewards over incredible natural and cultural values. We have some of the most threatened and endangered species in Tasmania. We've got swift parrot, for which there's only a couple of hundred left on planet Earth, the 40 spotted pardalote, among many others, the Iostolus skipper. We have these incredible natural values that require protection, and it's not just because it feels good to protect them, but it's our international obligation to protect them. And this is particularly important when it comes to areas like Bruny Island, which are listed in the federal government's strategy as islands of importance. So we do have a responsibility beyond ourselves and beyond just this community. We are supposed to be protecting and defending our flora and fauna. And one of the mechanisms to do that is, of course, to avoid the biodiversity impact in the first place. But then where that impact can't be avoided, then we should mitigate it, and there's a hierarchy there where basically you want to minimise and avoid it, and where you can offset on site you should do that, and where you can't, then finally as a last resort, then a financial contribution can be made in order to then invest in restoring those biodiversity impacts elsewhere off-site. So I really want to emphasise the fact that this is a last resort. And so far, the Kingborough Environmental Fund, which is the beneficiary of these biodiversity offset offsets, has made enormous contributions into protecting important biodiversity values in Kingborough. I had a couple of questions around this, just to, I guess, set the scene. I had the privilege of going on a couple of little excursions, as I know many other councillors did, to see the private land reserves that are protecting really critical areas of natural habitat. One of those where we visited, and I just, this is my first question, when we visited this private land reserve, there was a location where, as I recall, nearly half of all the known specimens of a particular orchid is perched on the edge of a coastal coastal remnant native bushland. I guess my first question is, what are some of the impacts that the Kingborough Environmental Fund has had, specifically around things like protecting those orchids? And secondly, what would happen if that biodiversity offset policy was abolished? What would happen to the fund, and what would happen to those private land reserves?
Ms. Quinn, are you able to assist us?
Yes, through you, Mayor. So, as you say, the Kingborough Environmental Fund was set up to hold in trust, if you like, at council financial biodiversity offsets, which are only a very small part of our overall biodiversity offset policy. So the offset policy looks at both, in a hierarchy, on-site offsets and then off-site offsets, which could be revegetation or restoration, whatever they might be, at a different site from the impact. And the last one of those is financial offsets. So, yeah, quite a small part of the overall biodiversity outcomes. But in saying they're a small part, it's also, as you say, been a really successful program. So what it does is council acts, I guess, as a middle ground for those developers. So what we do is we say, instead of you needing to find an offset site to compensate for the loss, Kimberley Council will do that through our environmental trust. And so we pull together those offset contributions and pull together the offsets that are all for the same value, and then go and look for a site, generally on private land, not always, but to where those values can be protected in perpetuity, which is where the reserves come from. Yeah. So those reserves are protected under the Nature Conservation Act as conservation covenants, and they will be protected in perpetuity. They're in the Tasmanian Reserve Estate. So if the Kingborough Environmental Fund ceased to exist, or Kingborough Council ceased to exist, or something like that happened, those reserves would exist because they're in the Tasmanian Reserve Estate, which is the highest level of protection they can have. So that's a great outcome. The Kingborough Environmental Fund, its main outcome, because it's the most secure conservation outcome, is these private land reserves, which benefit, of course, private landowners, because we pay stewardship payments to those landowners to manage that land in perpetuity. But the other activities the fund has done, so there's six conservation covenants. There's another one in the pipeline on Bringing Island that will likely be realised this year. The other things are revegetation, both on council land and private land, to offset loss of high conservation value trees. And also a very small portion goes into recovery actions for threatened species, and that might be surveys or nest boxes or some other type of recovery action that's listed in a threatened species recovery plan.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you for that answer. My next question is around what is the impact on the property owners who have, and, you know, to be fair, we all heard them at the annual general meeting raised concern not just around this policy but around other policies like or other issues like planning, landscape conservation zone and the like. I want a clear picture of how many people this actually impacts, because my understanding is that the fund has raised about $1 million over the past how many years. Hopefully we can have that clarified. And when we're talking about the financial offsets, according to the policy, it's up to $570 per tree of very high conservation value and up to $340 for high conservation value as identified in Table 2. And so they have definitions for what a very high conservation value tree is. My understanding was it's something like greater than 70 centimetres in diameter at a certain height. And I moved a motion a number of years ago now wanting to increase that quantum, because my belief was that it simply wasn't enough. It became a cost of doing business to have a financial offset where you could simply pay a certain amount of money, knock over a 100-year-old tree with nesting hollows for an endangered species like a swift parrot, and then in return all you would have to do is, you know, pay $570 and away you go. And over the years that's added up to not just the Kimber Environmental Fund, which has done great work, but it's also meant the destruction of thousands upon thousands of high and very high conservation value trees in Kingborough. And that's why these biodiversity offsets are supposed to be a very last resort, because you simply cannot, because of the time that it takes to grow a very high conservation value tree with nesting hollows, you simply cannot put five seedlings into the ground and then wait and see what happens. The masked owl won't last that long, the swift parrot won't last that long, and the Ayatollah skipper won't last that long. So my question is, how many Kingborough landowners have been affected by this? How many Kingborough landowners have actually paid biodiversity offsets over the past however many years?
Ms. Quinn.
We provided that number to a question with notice, I think, last year. So I do actually have the number. So 532 applications. Between 2010, when the biodiversity offset policy was first endorsed by council, and 2024, 532 applications made a financial contribution into the Kingborough Environmental Fund. That information is all accessible on our website. So on Council's website, under the Kingborough Environmental Fund, there's a spreadsheet that anyone can access that shows all of the contributions that have made into the fund. So it has the development number of that, the address, not the street address obviously for confidentiality, but the area if you like, and where that money has gone. And in terms of the setting of those amounts, we did have quite at the last review in 2022, looked into that in great detail, as you recalled. And it's important to note that in Kingborough, we do take a different approach to the mainland. So pretty much all states on the mainland, biodiversity offsetting is normal. It's in state legislation. Everybody does it. It's implemented through local government as well as state government in those states. In Tasmania, that is different. The state government does do biodiversity offsetting through the Forest Practices Authority and through NRE and the Environment EPA. Of course, also in local government, because it's in the Tasmanian planning scheme. So, but the approach we've taken in Kingborough is to actually, instead of use a market-based approach, which they do in other states where there's a lot of players in the market, so people trade, if you like. A farmer may have the biodiversity on their land and they can put that up and have that, propose that as an offset, and then the developer can use that. So it's a market-based trading approach which sets the price potentially, which is why you're talking about higher prices in Kingborough. What we've done, because our market's too small to do that, we've set those rates at the level at which we know that we can get those offsets. So we've looked at what can we achieve. So if we lose two trees here and we need to find five trees there, what does it cost to protect that offset in perpetuity? And we've set the rate at the real cost for council, which is why we need to review those rates regularly.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
So through you, ma'am, we've just heard that there's 534 times that people have needed to engage with this policy. We have a population of some 40,000 people. Isn't it true, here's my next question, isn't it true that some of these people who have to avail themselves of the provisions of the policy are not even Kingborough residents? So, for example, when we're looking at the supermarket development that's happening here in Kingborough, the development company that had to pay some biodiversity offset, they're not even Kingborough residents. I mean, they're just paying a price for developing in our municipality. Is that true, that they wouldn't all be Kingborough residents and some of them would have had to pay... That those 534 are not individuals. They're not even individual households in Kingborough. They're sometimes development companies and corporations from interstate. Is that correct?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that is correct.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. Let's set the scene. This has been a policy that has had an enormous positive impact, but it's also only affected less than 1% of the people who have gone through development applications or residents in Kingborough. We're talking 534 people who have needed to use this, and this is over the course of years and years, and they've only had to pay $570 per tree, very high conservation value tree, when I think they should have been paying thousands upon thousands of dollars, and in places like Canberra and inner city Melbourne, we're talking sometimes $1 million for a tree. So the scale of this biodiversity offset policy is not a big problem. In fact, it's not controversial. In fact, it's good practice to have a biodiversity offset policy. My final question would be, when we choose to review policies at a given time, why do we, what, what is the term length that a policy should have? Like, why did we choose to review this policy in November 2027 as opposed to choosing to review it the week after it was written? On what basis do we make those decisions about when we review our policies?
Mr. Smee.
Our policies are subject to review depending on a number of factors. So the majority of policies are reviewed no less than every 5 years. However, if there's legislative change, if there is if there is a reason why a policy should be reviewed sooner than that, then that forms part of that policy formulation in terms of the time frame for review. But our standard time for most policies is 5 years, but it's a horses for courses approach in terms of looking at the potential for change over time and the potential for a need for update to that policy. So there isn't a hard and fast rule. It does relate to the particular subject matter of the policy.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. In conclusion, the biodiversity offset policy was last reviewed in November of 2023. It will be reviewed again in November of 2027. It's a very important policy. It's a critical part of our armamentarium to protect Kingborough's very precious flora and fauna, for which we have a responsibility not just to each other and ourselves and the community, but to the state, to the nation and to the world to protect critically endangered species like the swift parrot and the 40-spotted pardalote. It's critically important that we have a robust community consultation, and that will take place in November of 2027. Thank you.
Further contributions? Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. With your assistance, I'd like to foreshadow an amendment to the policy that I've shared with all members around the table here earlier today, which probably encouraged some spirited debate earlier. Do you want me to just word it out, or do you want me to speak to it?
I believe Mrs. Morton has...
Yeah, I'll read it while she does her magic thing.
...copy of it, and can put that up there. If you can then read it out, and then before you proceed, I will need to seek a seconder.
Yes. My amendment is that the biodiversity offset policy be reviewed commencing in 2026 with a report to Council within 6 months, including community consultation and an assessment of the financial impacts of the policy on both applicants and the Council.
So that is the motion, the amendment, sorry, being moved by Councillor Ntoli. Is there a seconder for the amendment? Councillor Street. Okay, so we're now debating the amendment. You can make your contribution now.
Thank you, Mayor. So the amendment does not choose to delete the policy or encourage the policy. It simply takes into account that the community concern around this policy is extremely heightened. It's one of our policies that has the most, shall we say, negative feedback from the community. And I want to know from a review whether the policy is good. And if it's good, it can come to Council and we can vote on it. And I'd also like to know if it's bad, why it's bad, and we can come to Council and vote on it. And we can actually listen to the significant source of community concern that's out there, because it has a material financial impact for landholders, and it's become a significant source, as I've said, of their concern, as was clearly expressed at the AGM, which was far better attended than AGMs in some years previous, and it was unanimously supported. So given those impacts, I think it's reasonable and responsible for Council to hear their voice, to simply review it a lot earlier than in late 2027. Don't want to see a review kicked down the road any longer than is necessary. Our community is at the worst heightened sensitivity about anything to do with planning, and this touches planning. It has a material impact on planning than I've ever seen in my life. And I think any whiff of wanting to kick this down the road is dumb and a disaster. This is a re-election year, and I think if you're an incumbent, of which I'm one, it's going to be tough to come back. There's going to be a lot of people putting themselves up. That aside, because I actually am not concerned personally, we should be doing what is right. And I think it is right to simply hear their concerns, say, yep, we'll review it, no problems, and then we'll come back and we'll decide. And in fact, they may get some facts out of it that will contradict maybe their perception. It may be very persuasive that we keep the policy. And if that's the case, I'll vote for it if it's persuasive. If the policy is good, it will stand on its own two legs, and if it is bad, it will die and we will shoot it dead. Simple as that. So I'd just like to put that forward simply. It's not hard. We're not trying to kill it. We're not trying to promote it. We just want to review it. We want the facts and we want community consultation involved in it because it affects the community. And unless I'm mistaken, it was community consultation was never implemented in its construction and implementation back in 2010. So that's my reasoning to my peers to vote in favour.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
I'm just going to make a short contribution, Mayor. Notwithstanding anything that Councillor Antoli has said and notwithstanding any of my misgivings about the biodiversity offset policy, which I've had and held over a number of years, the policy itself at Clause 5.5 states that it should be reviewed every 5 years or upon changes to planning instruments or following any changes to planning instruments. One such change would be the complete replacement of the planning scheme, in my view, and so it would be appropriate that given at some stage this year we are going to have a new planning scheme for Kingborough, that Clause 5.5 of the policy be followed and a review be undertaken.
Thank you. I just realised that I made an error in not asking the mover and seconder of the initial motion, so Councillor Cordova and Councillor Midgley, if they were willing to accept the amendment put up by Councillor Antoli, so I apologise. I fully expected that would be the answer, so apologies for that error. I was just focused on finding a seconder for the motion, so we can continue. Further discussions? Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Street, for raising 5.5, I think you said. I wasn't aware of that. I think that is a good point. I'm wondering, though, if we should wait until we have the new planning scheme in place before we start the review, if we've come a little bit too early in that sense. That's just something that I'm pondering. The other question that I had was just picking up on a comment that Councillor Antoli said that there wasn't particularly thorough community consultation when this policy began. I just wanted to ask that question and find out what level of consultation there was at that time.
Ms. Quinn?
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. So, the policy was put forward to Council in 2010. And there wasn't consultation before the policy was put in place. It was put in place because we had been doing biodiversity offsets with the planning scheme because the Forest Practices Authority did them. And so when that stopped, when Looper changed, then that moved, the responsibility moved to Council. And so Council took that on and wrote a policy.
So did or didn't?
We didn't do community consultation then. No, it did come to the Chamber, of course, and was endorsed by the people who were elected by the community, so, but not community consultation the way that we know it in terms of engagement, no. And then it came back to the Chamber in 2016. It was reviewed at that point and didn't go to community consultation then, but was endorsed by Council. Didn't, no. And the nature why it didn't, which has been said previously to this question has been answered previously, is because it's a technical policy that creates the rules around offsetting. So the consultation isn't do we or do we not want to do biodiversity offsetting, because that's set by the planning scheme. And so the consultation would be about what are the species that should be involved or in offsetting. So those things are set by the state in the Threatened Species Act and the Nature Conservation Act. Or what should the replacement ratios be, or what should the financial values be. So that is the reason at the time that we considered, that council at the time considered that they were technical in nature. So what we did in 2022 was a technical consultation, where we consulted with ecological consultants who work in Kingborough and asked them, because of course they're working for their clients, so we asked them about the usability of the policy, any issues that they found with it in terms of applying it for their clients. And we also consulted with the state government, with the Forest Practices Association, and the Natural Resources Department, as well as species experts. So it was a technical consultation, not a community consultation. And so that is why I have put in the recommendation that I'm very happy to, I think it's a good idea, to go to community consultation at the next review.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So I think a robust democracy should always include thorough community consultation. So I think that that's a little problematic for me. It's just a question now of timing. I know it's recommended for 2027. Councillor Ntowi's motion is bringing that forward a year. I'm still wondering about whether we need to wait until we've moved over to the new planning scheme or not. I think I might just listen to my colleagues and see what others say, but I do think it's problematic that there hasn't been community consultation. I think that there are many community members who think that the biodiversity offset policy is a really good one and really value the Kingborough Environmental Fund. So I think it is important that we put that question to our community and really find out thoroughly what it is that they value. I think there are differing opinions on this one, and it would be good to understand that more fully.
Further speakers. I've got Councillor Fox and then Councillor Bain.
I'd like to ask a question, really. I mean, considering we're reviewing the planning scheme at the moment, the amount of resources that that is taking, and to then pile this on the staff at this moment, I was wondering how it's going to affect council resources if we decide to go ahead with it in the next 6 months, and I'm quite concerned about it.
The CEO, please.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a good point. It is an unplanned work program, and as has been pointed out, the work that needs to be undertaken is not just a review of the content and the whether or not the policy is achieving certain outcomes, but also there's that consultation element that has been foreshadowed as something that we would undertake in the next review. So there is not an inconsequential amount of work in that. Options being that we undertake that with an existing resource, which would be deferring other work programs or stopping other activity across council. I can't say what that would be at the moment because we would need to look into how that would be undertaken. I guess there's always the option of buying additional resource, so whether that be consultants or additional staffing on a fixed term basis. So these things do have financial or work program consequence in doing them in an unplanned manner. So that's a consideration that we would need to take if council chose to do this before it had been planned.
Councillor Fox.
I'm also concerned about consultation fatigue at the moment from the community, because there are so many complex things happening at the moment, and we've got an election coming on. It might be better if we wait till after the election, when the whole planning scheme issue has settled down, when the controversial issues that we're facing at the moment hopefully have been resolved. And I just feel reluctant to add yet another level of consultation at this point in time to the community. So in that regard, I would oppose the amendment at this point, but I'd like to hear what other councillors have to say.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I was actually going to raise the risk again, 8.4, which is the question that Councillor Fox just asked. So am I correct in saying that if this was done after the new planning scheme's in place, then some of those resources would be available to do this work?
The CEO.
So
we probably need to decouple it in some ways directly from the new planning scheme. That's a discrete program of work with certain people working on it. The teams that work on the review might overlap a little bit, but the core teams probably are unlikely to be the same. I guess the point around it, though, is the timing. It would push it into a new financial year, and we are still in the process of developing the final work programs and budgets for conversation with council into that, so it would allow it to be planned if it was in a different year to the current one in terms of our capacity.
Councillor Bain.
With that in mind, I think my view at the moment is probably I'd like to see it brought forward, but perhaps shifted into the 26-27 work plan. So, you know, maybe we look at late, my view is maybe look at late 26 or early 27 to try and get that much needed community consultation on the subject, but then hopefully avoid conflicting the resources and also overlapping with the LPS work. And one other question while I can. There's reference in discussion section about a role that state government might play in this space shortly. Is there any information available on that, when they might come into place?
Can you reference the paragraph that you're referring to? Oh, you know where it is? Oh. Ms. Chakuti.
Unfortunately, no. It was a brief statement provided late last year by the state government that they're looking at a more comprehensive offset framework, or planning to look at a more comprehensive offset framework for Tasmania. There wasn't an indication of scope or timing of that.
Councillor Bain.
So, in other words, it could be a long way off.
Or not.
So my perspective is at the moment that I'd like to see it brought forward, perhaps not within the next 6 months, but I'm interested in what other councillors have to say as well.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. There's been some really excellent points made and a great discussion and great questions. As has been asked tonight around, do we represent community and do we listen to community? We all are elected to represent different views and ideas from our community, and that really is diverse. It is tricky when we have an AGM and we have a group of community members putting forward such motions, because it is a representative of people who value this. And I thank them for coming forward. That is democracy and advocacy, and I absolutely support that. So I did read the report thoroughly. I have many community members that I will, I think even recently, about a month ago in Hobart, someone telling me how great the Kingborough Community Environmental Fund is and the value they've seen of that, and they attended an event last year. I know there is a big section of the community that very, very much value this biodiversity offset policy, who probably wasn't aware of this motion being put forward at the AGM. So it would have been an interesting thing if we put this forward to the whole community. I'd be interested to see whether they would like us to review this earlier. But I think the report is very thorough. It raises some really key points. Councillor Bain highlighted in relation to the risk areas in regards to the staffing, resources, the fact that we do not have a planning scheme, and these things take long. We've heard tonight that things are already going to be pushed back, so we don't really know what the timeline is for that. I think 6 months is way too soon. There was a number of other motions put forward at that AGM. Council is in a very busy state, but also at the moment with many different projects going, it's not like we're saying we're never reviewing this policy. It is in a review schedule, and I do, you know, think that probably, you know, once we have the new planning scheme, we can look at it in this 26-27 budget. Perhaps that is something that we can move forward on and have a look at, but we're not ready to do that this in 6 months. We don't want to go out for another hire a consultant when it's already in the work plan in regards to when we're going to do it. So I don't
support the amendment that has been put forward by Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. As others have said, some really good points have been brought up about the implementation. I guess the technicality of the amendment that's been put forward by Councillor Antoli, broad agreement, I think, that the policy, well, it has to be reviewed, clearly, but that there should be community consultation this time around. The challenges of doing it within the next 6 months, I understand and wouldn't be supportive of incurring further costs and having to go out to consultants again. In light of that, I would like to move an amendment to the amendment, and that would be that the biodiversity offset policy be reviewed within 6 months of the commencement of the statewide planning scheme.
Is that amendment acceptable to the mover and the seconder of the motion?
And we think it'll be sometime around June, is that right? What's the guess?
Ms. Shakuti.
My amendment clearly says any time in 2026.
Through you, Mayor. So hearings complete by mid-year, well and truly. Then the Commission will need to do their assessment. I'm actually unsure of the timing of that. They may have some directions back to the Planning Authority around what needs to happen and for the scheme to be finalised, and then there will be implementation. So it's hard to put a definitive timeline on it. I would go to say end of the year as a likely timing of the TPS coming into place.
It does say 2026. Should we make it calendar 2026 to avoid confusion? It's not an FY. It's not FY26.
So the question I'm asking you is, we've got a proposed amendment to your amendment on the table, so you need to either accept that amendment or...
I think just leaving it as calendar 2026 is sufficient. I don't want it to be started within 6 months of the end of 26 so that we get a report in June. It's no different to doing it in November of 27. I don't think that's answering the community's concern. I think we've got plenty of time, and we can stretch out the perfect timing of the review. And it doesn't need to be a white paper.
I'm trying to understand what you're saying, because I feel like now you're changing potentially your own
out here,
motion.
Christian. You and I are a bit clear on that.
So, Councillor Street.
The motion as it stands is that the review commence in 2026 with a report to Council within 6 months after the review's commencement. Councillor Antoli, is that the intention?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
what it is. Time for the community consultation.
Yeah, I understand. Councillor Dean's amendment's acceptable to me, but it's not my motion, Mayor.
Okay, so it's acceptable to the seconder of the amendment. Is it acceptable to you, Councillor Antoli?
My concern about accepting is that we've just heard it could be at the end of 26 that the plan scheme is actually changed. That's the problem, and I don't think that's going to be acceptable to the community.
Okay, so... Okay, I can't take another amendment until we've resolved this amendment.
Yeah, question I'm happy to use.
We can't accept that amendment because it would have to go as a separate amendment if this amendment is unsuccessful. Don't you love meeting procedures? But you can ask a question.
Yeah, look, it goes to what Councillor Street raised at the beginning of this discussion. By leaving it as it is, and God forbid if it was to carry across... we are asking for a review to happen while the current planning scheme is still in force, and it sounds like that our policy already states that basically if a new scheme were to come in that it would trigger a review anyway. So the point here being is that we can't really do a review until the new scheme and this just makes sure that it is done within a timely way, and that we don't, because I've seen many times that a review is due. I mean, your tree policy for the street, you know, how many times has that been pushed out? Other policies, we just have limited resources, and I wouldn't want to see November 2027 turn into, you know, June 2028. This would just allow us, as soon as the new scheme commences, it frees up resources from staff perspective and ensure that it happens within that 6 month period. Is the reasoning behind why I sought that amendment?
Yep.
And so.
So are you foreshadowing that if this amendment is unsuccessful, that you will move your amendment? Okay. All right. Before we vote on it, because I think everybody's made their contributions on the amendment moved by Councillor Antoli, can I just ask Ms. Shakuti, in relation to, could you just clarify again, what are the implications of us doing a review under the current scheme as opposed to doing the review once we move to the new scheme? Because from what I, if I'm hearing this correctly, we will need to do it under the new scheme.
Through you, Mayor, that is my understanding, and I think it would be premature and perhaps to do it under the new scheme, and we would probably need to preempt what we consult on as being under the new scheme anyway.
Now I'm even more confused. So would we be, if we were doing this review, given we're not on the statewide planning scheme at the moment, we would have to do it on the Kingborough interim scheme that we're on at the moment. Is that right? And then we would have to do a new one when it's triggered by the statewide planning scheme coming in.
Through you, Mayor. I guess it's important to remember that the review is about the policy, not the planning scheme. So the policy, of course, is linked to the planning scheme. The planning scheme creates the head of power that allows us to do biodiversity offsetting in Kingborough, and that will continue under the Tasmanian planning scheme. So whilst the wording of those two schemes are different, like they are for every issue they're dealing with, they both reference biodiversity offsets, and therefore the policy will be required to provide the framework for how we do that in Kingborough. So that may or may not be helping. So 5.5, as Councillor Street pointed out earlier, does require the policy to be reviewed
when we get a new scheme.
When we get a new scheme. Well, that is our interpretation at this point in time of 5.5. So you would potentially be doing it twice, is my understanding.
Okay, that's what I was trying to understand, because we would be reviewing it, and then at the point where the new scheme comes in, then we would have to, that would trigger having to review it again. So potentially we could end up then reviewing it twice within 18 months. Correct?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Okay.
What I was pointing to before is that if for some reason we were to do it before the new planning scheme is in, it would not be wise to do that review and consultation
until we know what's in the new,
utilising the one, and we try to design it so it's predicting the TPS.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Has that raised any other questions for anyone? Councillor Cordova.
Certainly. Thank you, Mayor. So we heard originally that it was 532 proponents had to engage with this policy. My question is how many per year, because I want to have an indicative idea of how many people. If we just wait until November of 2027, how many proponents do we expect will avail themselves or need to avail themselves of this policy based on previous years? How many people per year are we actually talking about inconveniencing for the sake of a few months?
It'd probably be a guesstimate, but I'll see if Ms Quinn would like to have a guesstimate.
Through you, Mayor, it would be a guesstimate, and all I would be doing is dividing that number by how many years. So was it 14 years, I think, because I said 2010 to 2024. So I'm not good at maths, so I won't do that in my head. Allow someone else to do that. But, of course, that is not an accurate way to pull those statistics, unfortunately, because I'd like to be able to give you an accurate answer. because of course it just depends on development, who submits which developments to this council. Yeah.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. So I haven't yet, Mayor, spoken on this amendment. So let's assume that it's 38 people per year, and yet we're talking as though this is a matter of absolute urgency to the 40,000 residents of Kingborough. And we heard it first when the cat was belled by Councillor Antoli that this is not about, the intention here is not good public policy and review. The intention here is about framing up the local government election in October of 2026. It's about setting up a battle royale between the Liberals and the Greens about fighting for trees or fighting against trees. This is not how good public policy is run.
Point of order, Mayor. On misrepresentation of what was said, I mentioned...
Councillor Antoli on a point of order.
Yeah. So one of the point of orders is you can't misrepresent what a councillor said. I never said I'm doing this because I want to get in, and I made it very clear. And my position is, of all the people around this room, I'm not worried about that. I'm saying it's about what is right. I mentioned the words what is right and good for the community, and that is public policy, so I'd like that withdrawn.
Thank you. I will uphold the point of order because I don't believe I heard Councillor Antoli say anything to that effect. So if you would like to please desist from that particular theme, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Happy to do that, Mayor. Happy to withdraw that comment. I want to make the critical point here, which is that for the fear of upsetting 38 developers who might or might not need to use this policy between now and November 2027, we are running the risk of, well, firstly, doing this review twice, which is an obscene waste of council resources, but we're also running the risk of not waiting to see what the new Tasmanian planning scheme looks like in Kingborough. We need time for this to settle in so that we know exactly what impact it may or may not have on those proponents that need to avail themselves of the policy. When you ask a community member, and I, like Councillor Antoli, am not afraid of the community consultation. I think it's a critically important aspect of good public policy is to ask the community what they think. And here's another thing that I know. When you ask community members, did you know that in Kingborough we've got 50% of the global population of a species of orchid clinging to a cliffside in the channel, do you want to protect it? They will say yes. And if you ask them, do you think developers should pay $570 per very high conservation value tree that they knock over in order to protect those natural values, they will say yes. So I'm not fearful of the 532 people or the 38 developers per year who might be upset about us defending flora and fauna in Kingborough. I'm not afraid because we have 40,000 residents in Kingborough, many of whom care desperately about protecting what makes Kingborough great, which includes our natural values. So I say bring it on. If this is a fight that wants to be had before the election, then a fight we may have to have. But good public policy would say that we should wait until the Tasmanian planning scheme, until the dust settles in Kingborough on the new Tasmanian planning scheme before we race ahead simply to frame up an election. I think we should actually have good public policy as our guiding North Star rather than having this manufactured urgency to deal with everything before November of 2026. Call me a cynic, but I think it's quite clear what this manufactured urgency is about. We heard it from the horse's mouth. It's not about good public policy. It's about getting this done before November of 2026, and I think that is an abject shame. And I'll defend Kingborough's environment for sure. I will.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli on a question.
Yes, I have a question. So we've gotten some good advice that there's a chance that we may have to, if we do the review now, we may have to do it again within 6 months, maybe at the end of the year, when maybe the scheme becomes valid. So based on that, Mayor, it's probably worth, based on that advice, I'm probably happy to make the change according to what Councillor Dean said, that it's done within 6 months of when the actual scheme goes live. Can we do that?
Councillor Dean.
And I did just in case this were to come to fruition, send it to Ms Morton so it should be in your inbox.
Mrs Morton, are you able to assist with that wording, please? Do you have the wording while she's locating it? You'll have to speak up. I can't even hear you.
It's too far away. This it's like
don't the move the gold dot.
Oh, well, that was not my fault. That the biodiversity offset policy be reviewed within 6 months of the commencement of the statewide planning scheme.
So
Okay, so you are suggesting, is that...
It does remove the lights.
So, just to be clear, is that's like a whole new amendment. It's replacing the previous amendment from... Okay. So, Councillor Antoli and Councillor Street as the mover and the seconder, are you happy to... for that... So essentially, it's removing the amendment that you've made and replacing it with an alternative amendment.
Yes, and...
And that the complication here is in that amendment that is up on the screen that has been put forward by Councillor Dean would be then become your amendment with you as the mover and Councillor Street as the seconder.
I'm fine with that. I'm not here to get a gold tick that I did it and I won.
But you will get
I want the good
You will
policy.
Get the gold tick and I'll, then Councillor right. Dean will get a participation medal.
All right.
We haven't won yet either.
Okay. So you're happy. Can you just confirm that?
I'm happy.
Thank you. Councillor Street, you're happy to accept that amendment?
Never happy but content.
No, well, we know. Okay. So the amendment now becomes the amendment that is on the screen. So just for clarification, the amendment that is now moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Street is that the biodiversity offset policy be reviewed within 6 months of the commencement of the statewide planning scheme. Should we add in Kingborough, just to be clear? Yeah. Or am I being pedantic?
Probably.
What, I'm being pedantic or?
No. It should probably say.
Okay, could we add the words in Kingborough? I've got some queries now. So I'm going to go Councillor Dean, Councillor Bain, Councillor Midgley, and the Deputy Mayor.
While we're still drafting this, can I please just ensure that the clause around community consultation is put in there to be crystal clear that... I'm not sure that the second part of the original amendment was all that, maybe necessary, but definitely the bit about the community, just so that the community... don't have any fear.
And that, including community consultation. So you want that whole... Yep. Just, there we go. Look at that, by magic.
Well, that's, the second part, that's part of what a review does anyway, so that's fine. Yep.
But for clarity, that's probably good. Is that Councillor Antoli and Councillor Street happy with that? Okay. Councillor Bain? No, happy?
I was going to raise the community consultation.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley? Okay, so you're all so attentive. Okay, this is now the amendment, but because you've accepted it, everyone's actually spoken on the amendment, so unless you've got a question, I'm going to put the amendment.
Question,
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Mayor, the question is, because we heard earlier that last time community consultation didn't take place because it was technical in nature, my question is, what is the scope of the community consultation? Will it include questions like, should the cost of a high conservation value tree be $5,000 or $500? Or will it be a community consultation about, do you think it's a good idea to have biodiversity offsets in Kingborough or not? Or will it be about, what is the scope of this community consultation? What questions are we actually asking? Because that affects what feedback we receive.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Very important question, something I think about a lot before we go to community consultation. We will design the consultation and when the time comes, and therefore I cannot answer that question, but it would be my intention to make sure that the community has an opportunity to answer some specific prompts that we give, like the questions that you just said, as well as, of course, being able to give a broad response on any matter that they wish to in relation to the biodiversity offset policy. So I wouldn't want to lock the consultation down to specific questions that we ask. But the really important elements, I guess, of the policy are what it applies to when offsetting is triggered. Of course, it's the header part that required that's in the scheme, so it's not going to say do we or do we not do biodiversity offsetting, but it will ask questions like you're suggesting about what are those important priority values and what are the financial offset values set at and what are the replacement ratios. what type of offsets are valid. Could it be protection of reserves? Should it be revegetation? Should it be, and I guess you can see from where I'm going about, I think it's great that we'll ask those communities, the community, those questions, but we will also go to technical consultation, I would imagine, when we do this, because we want to hear from the species experts as well as hear about what the community would like to be in the biodiversity offset policy.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova, does that assist?
The final question then is around that technical consultation. And so if I'm hearing correctly, there will still be a component of this consultation which involves key stakeholders, whether it's subject matter experts or people from NRE or people from parks or, you know, people who have expertise in environmental planning, so that they can actually tell us what those environmental values that we're protecting might be.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, that would absolutely be my intention, yes.
Thank you. Councillor Bain with a question.
Yes. Question. Is this likely to come to Council for a discussion before we go to community consultation? Or a workshop?
Ms. Chikuti.
Through you, Mayor, potentially. I would say potentially a workshop might be appropriate.
Okay. All right. As you've all exhausted your questions and your contributions on the amendment, I'm going to put the amendment. It's moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Okay. I'll have a show of hands, please. All those in favour of the amendment as printed on the screen? Don't confuse me, Councillor Cordova. Is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Street, Gladewright and Reet, and those against is Councillors Fox and Cordova. The amendment is passed, is carried. Sorry, I just had a complete brain fade just then. Temporary second. Okay, so the amended motion becomes the substantive motion. Well,
We voted on the amendment. Happy to move that the motion be put.
Yep.
I just have one more question.
Okay.
Well, no, you need to deal with the motion that the motion be put.
I've moved it formally.
So, Councillor, so I've got a procedural motion that the motion be put. Moved by Councillor Street. I need a seconder. Councillor Dean. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Okay, show of hands is required. It's not. We're not voting on the motion. We're voting on the procedural motion, to be clear. Show of hands is required. All those in favour? The procedural motion is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Street, Gladewright and Reet, and those against, Councillors Fox and Councillor Cordova. So, the motion, this now requires, because that was successful, this now requires that we wrap this up and that the motion is put. So I am putting the motion... which has been moved then by Councillor Antoli and Councillor Street. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously after all that. Thank you all very much for your contributions. That brings us to page 40, Annual General Meeting, Notice of Motions, Change of Zoning for Draft Local Provisions Schedule, with a recommendation on page 43. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I can't move anything from the chair, so somebody's going to have to put their hand up.
Could I ask for a break? I'm just getting on the pace of this meeting.
Yeah, I didn't realise how late it had already got, actually. That's sorry. I did notice a few people leaving the room and it didn't occur to me we hadn't had a comfort break.
Not at all.
So if members of the public gallery and those watching along at home will just bear with us, we will have a short break and we will be back at 8 p.m. It just stops people having to leave the room for during debate. So see you back at 8. Well, good. Okay, thank you. Welcome back. So the time being 8 p.m. Thank you to those who are with us in person this evening and to everyone who's watching along on YouTube for being patient while we just had a quick break to get a cup of tea so that we can continue to focus beautifully as we get through the rest of the agenda. So we are now on page 40, item 15.2, AGM notices of motion. This one is in relation to change of zoning for draft local provisions schedule with a recommendation on page 43. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll just read out the... I think the critical part of the motion that's before us is the concept of fairness and transparency of this process. We, as representatives of the community, we need to reflect community concerns and the community concerns that are held in good faith by people who are very passionate about this issue and have made it abundantly clear their position on the topic. And as is their democratic right, they expressed that through a motion at the annual general meeting. And as Councillor Midgley mentioned before, it's that is commendable and it's admirable, and I think it's a testament to a healthy and functioning democracy where that takes place without fear, without aggression. You know, I think this is a sign of a functioning democracy. The reality that we are now faced with, or the constraint that the council now faces, is that we shouldn't pass any motions that compromise the fairness and transparency of the draft local provisions schedule, and we shouldn't be compromising the integrity of that hearings process. That would be unfair to the participants of that hearing process if we start leaning in ways that aren't ordained or authorised by the Tasmanian Planning Commission and start making up our own rules and start playing by our own rules. That wouldn't be fair on those people participating in those hearings. So, as it says in 8.1, passing the motions could compromise the fairness and transparency of the draft local provision schedule hearing process. Without qualified input from the planning authority, the TPC may make decisions that do not fully reflect community feedback or local context. This increases the likelihood of zoning outcomes that differ from what residents expect, potentially impacting how land is used and the character of our community. While the motions carried at the annual general meeting reflect genuine community concerns, implementing them without qualified planning input would compromise the integrity of the draft LPS assessment process. The TPC requires evidence-based recommendations that align with statutory planning principles, regional strategies, and community feedback. Council's current review of the LCZ and related areas is the most appropriate way to address these concerns, ensuring that outcomes are fair, transparent, and consistent with good planning practice. Completing this review and responding to Direction 69 will provide the community with the confidence that their views are considered within a robust and lawful framework. That's what is at the heart of this conversation tonight. There may be a plurality of views around this table, but what's critical is that we don't undermine the process that's laid out by the state government. It's not our process. It's not a process that we can design and craft our own adventure. It's a process that is given to us by those directions that the TPC gave. And so that leads me to my question, which is what does happen if the risks as outlined in 8.1 come to pass? What does that look like if the TPC, if we pass exactly what the those constituents at the AGM wanted us to pass? What does that look like when the TPC responds?
Mr. Cootie.
Through you, Mayor. What it would entail, and interpreting the motion as that councils, the planning authority, submits sort of consistently that environmental living be zoned to rural living, and I believe it was rural resource goes to rural living, and not having an alternative position if, as we present through, or as representations are heard through the hearings, would leave the Commission in a position where they would not have qualified input from the planning authority and assessing each property or representational area on its merits and in accordance with the requisite guidelines and policies, etc. So what that would then mean is the Commission would more or less be then determining each representation, but also more broadly, I suppose, the hearings from here in relation to these motions without the planning authority. So it, in a sense, become a unilateral decision-making process. So that's the risk.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. So through you, Mayor, the fundamental problem here, as I see it, is that people who feel aggrieved with the landscape conservation zoning that's been designated to their property, and also those in environmental living who wanted to get zoned rural living, they essentially, either they get to have their day in the hearings where they participate, or, as we've unfortunately heard, is about the instances where some people either didn't hear about the consultation or for whatever reason they're not participating in those hearings and they feel aggrieved. Okay, but let's say that they do get to choose their own adventure and choose their own zoning. So people in landscape conservation zone get to choose that they are now in rural living. How come people in general residential don't get to choose their own adventure and choose what zoning they get? You either had this very unfair system where people in rural, people who have been designated in LCZ get to choose what their zoning is, but nobody else does, or the logical corollary of that is that maybe you end up with a system where everybody gets to choose their own adventure, and if you're an agricultural zoned property, you get to choose that you're inner city residential because you want to build apartment blocks on your farm. This is why the Tasmanian Planning Commission doesn't allow people to choose their own zoning. This is why we have a process that is fair and that is transparent and that involves public hearings, so that when somebody feels aggrieved by the zoning designation that they've been given, they get to test that in the hearings with their evidence and their reasoning and their justification, their rationale for why they think that they've been zoned incorrectly. But the fundamental tension here is that either you have a system where it's just really unfair that people zoned LCZ get to choose their own zoning but nobody else does, or you get a system where everybody has a free-for-all and gets to choose their own zoning, which would be a madhouse for good public policy, because indeed you would get people in agricultural areas, or people down at Woodbridge who want to build multi-storey apartments, they'd have beautiful views, there'd be people who would want to purchase those multi... one more minute. Please may I ask for one
Could
minute.
Could I have a second? Okay, so the motion is that Councillor Cordova be granted one more minute. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. You have one more minute.
Mayor, there is a reason why the TPC lays out the process as it does. It's because it's logical, it's fair, it's transparent, and it has integrity. If we pass motions that are not underpinned by those good planning principles, we will be doing a disservice to the process, and we will also be making our council a chaotic laughingstock when all of the other municipalities have managed to achieve this within the guidelines as set out by the TPC. Why would we be the one council that can't seem to manage to figure it out? It's really important that we let these hearings progress with fairness, transparency and integrity, and that's why I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to propose an amendment that I believe synthesises the technical advice we've received in this report and community concern. I've pre-sent it all to council officers. May I read it out?
Please. Yes, please, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. That Council, in addition to completing the current LCZ review and responding to Direction 69, request that a separate communication be provided to the Tasmanian Planning Commission outlining that elected councillors note and support the community position expressed at the annual general meeting regarding zoning outcomes, while acknowledging that final recommendations must be informed by qualified planning advice and statutory criteria.
Yeah. Can I just be clear before I ask for a seconder? Are you suggesting that that is an additional item D, or are you trying to replace the entire motion?
The recommendation is
so
to
you're seeking,
note.
So your amendment is that the existing recommendation of points A, B and C be removed and replaced with your motion that you've just read out, correct? Just for clarification, okay, do we have a
technical reason why that's not the case possible, let me know. Yes.
That is the amendment being foreshadowed by Councillor Antoli. The original motion was moved by Councillor Cordova and Councillor Bain. Is it acceptable to you both? Not to Councillor Cordova as the mover. Seconder, Councillor Bain? It doesn't really matter because Councillor Cordova actually... Sorry. that was the Claytons asking, wasn't it? I apologise because the window's kind of closed.
Is it getting rid of A, B and C? And
yes, it is. It correct. Yeah. That's why I was seeking that clarification. So
is it even legal?
No, so...
There's a question.
It is because okay. That was effectively what was done in the previous... motion. Okay, so do I have a seconder for Councillor Antoli's? Yep, seconded by the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Antoli on the amendment. So.
Thank you very much. Look, as currently drafted, the recommendation limits Council response to technical and consultant-based processes and does not provide for any explicit communication reflecting Councillor support for the community, for the AGM's position. And I consider it appropriate that TPC be made aware of elected member perspective alongside, because that clearly separates from qualified planning advice. We've received communication already, Mayor, from the TPC that basically was a chance for us to pause, and I've mentioned it in previous meetings. It's a bit like your professor handing you back your practice exam and giving you a wink and saying, I'm just circling this one section, you can do better, have another crack at that. And that's what they basically did for us. They basically said, look, if you guys more widely apply, for example, RLZ, you're probably going to get a better outcome with your community. So the community's come back, they've read all that, they've digested all that, and they came back with something that I think is pretty fair. We want a system that more opts into LCZ than opts out. And unless there's technical advice otherwise, I think that's fantastic. And if that's what they want, may they be blessed to receive it, because it's still within the planning scheme and the TPC will still allow it. But if we just simply go with a technical response, it is not communicating the weight of desire from the community. So this... I'll just pause.
Okay.
Did you want to give an update?
I'm just concerned about the wording of the motion now that I've reflected on it.
Okay.
That it's very general and it doesn't refer to any specific specific motion that was put at the AGM. It just says the support community position expressed at the AGM regarding zoning outcomes. Well, there were a number of motions, so you might want to tighten it up to be specific about which, well, because if you go back to the original motion, then this was the original motion was, sorry, the AGM motion was asking for that council intervenes as the planning authority and preferences all previously zoned environmental living properties that come before council acting as the planning authority, etc., etc., unless specifically requesting LCZ. The council intervenes as the planning authority, preferences all previously zoned rural resource properties, etc., etc. So that was the original motion. So you may want to...
Can we just reference those sections in the report, in the actual amendment, as per... the AGM request.
So it was two different motions that were passed. So you might just want to... I don't know how we best...
In A, note the motions carried.
Well, it's not... But it's these two. It's these two motions, not... There were other motions on the agenda that came before us at the AGM. That's what I'm trying to... Otherwise, potentially... I'm just trying to help with the outcome here, because otherwise potentially the
the way it's worded at the moment is it could mean all motions carried at the AGM. Yeah.
Well, I'm obviously referring to... To me, this synthesises the motions put forward that are outlined in 1.1 of our report.
Yep.
One of them says we need to holus bolus make the decision here to rezone everything as an opt-out process, which we can't do. We have to follow technical advice. My motion synthesises the technical advice that we need to go through the review, but also we can choose, according to the technical advice, a method to write to the TPC and communicate our support for what I've mentioned here.
Suggestion. Sorry, we're just. I'm just seeking some advice from the CEO on how we can tighten up the wording to be reflective of what, so that it's clear what this motion is. Because I don't feel like at the moment that it actually, it's very broad. If you can just bear with us.
Yeah. Through you, Mayor. Look, I'll just take a second, if I may, just to have a quick look at what we can do here that might be helpful in terms of Councillor Antoli achieving the outcome that he's looking for, but make the motion as drafted clear so that it's easy for council officers to enact.
Sorry, this is always the challenge of amendments as we go through, so apologies to those who are waiting through our pauses while we work through this.
Can I ask a question?
All right. As long as the CEO doesn't have to respond to it. We can take that opportunity during the awkward pause to ask a question. Councillor Dean then. Councillor Midgley, go.
I guess. Oh, that's very loud. The intention of the motion I see is that we want to let the TPC know that at the AGM, the 35 community members that attended passed a motion. So we want that correspondence to be put to the TPC. That's what I'm. Is that my understanding of this amendment? And why wouldn't we include the other ABC?
Because they're in contrary to sort of one another.
So I'd rather... Well, it's not really a question.
It's not my amendment, so The advice from...
And we received it at 4:30 this afternoon as councillors as well, so that's why it's really hard to digest such a significant change.
So Councillor Iantoli doesn't want A, B and C in there. We sought that clarification. He's replacing the whole motion with the amendment. Councillor Fox.
I understand from the proposed motion that the implication that elected councillors note and support the community position expressed. We have not had the opportunity to have professional guidance on this. We haven't had a motion that we actually support the community motion expressed. So I position expressed. I take umbrage at that line in the actual amendment there because I don't think that's appropriate.
So you can. It is up to you to foreshadow an amendment to the amendment if the amendment gets up. which would remove those words and support, if you were more comfortable with that, and if that might facilitate the amendment going through. Councillor Antoli.
So maybe with some advice from the CEO as well, what if we made my amendment sort of like D, that there be a communication, mm-hmm. we take the communication part of it and put it as D, where we're communicating to the TPC our support.
Councillor, sorry, Mrs. Morton, could you just go up the page a bit, thank you. Just a little bit further down so we can almost see both the original motion and, yep, beautiful, thank you.
Let me read this. You could actually make it D and move and remove anything in it that might be a little bit repetitive of what A, B and C are saying. Make the whole thing as D. What do you think, CEO?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, I think that would help the clarity of purpose of the motion. So essentially from a interpretation standpoint, that would allow for the continuation of the review of the allocation of landscape conservation zone that is underway and in response to Direction 69. In addition, it would result in the authoring of a letter to the Tasmanian Planning Commission acknowledging the views that were raised through the AGM in regard to the landscape conservation zone and the rural resource zone, and would contextualise the council support of that position, noting that technical expertise would be provided separately.
Just so that we're not repeating anything, would it be best to start D at a separate communication be provided so we just lose that top line and word. So D starts there. So that becomes D. But having said that, who's the original motion was moved by Councillor Cordova and Councillor Bain, and I suspect that's probably not acceptable to them. So, okay.
Bias, that if council specifically says we support this or we don't support that against the TPC, aren't we as a planning authority not having an open and unprejudiced mind? Like if we say we support changing designations of zoning, I mean that's completely unprofessional for us to just call balls and strikes like that.
Ms. Shakuti, do you want to comment on that?
Through you, Mayor. The planning authority could put forward whatever position they would like or decide or agree to as a submission. Whether or not that is would be viewed as good planning, I suppose, advice or a position is for the councillors to determine. Going back to my answer earlier, is the Planning Commission will consider that and will continue to consider the representations on their merits.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor, isn't it true that there's a provision within the TPC that if this whole thing becomes such a schlamozzle, they can just withdraw council's participation in this process altogether
and manage it themselves at our cost?
Isn't that a provision within
Correct.
Their powers?
Correct.
So if we do something, this is my next question, if we do something that is so
wildly putting our thumb on the scale, as in literally making stipulations about we think without any qualified planning advice, we think that these properties should be that and these properties should be that, noting that none of us are professional planners, won't that significantly undermine our position as an independent planning authority and make us look like we're biased, prejudiced and putting our thumb on the scale in this process?
Ms. Shakuti, do you want to provide commentary on that?
Through you, Mayor, I suppose you could, yes, the planning authority should be objective and have the intent of, in terms of decisions and input into these type of processes, to be furthering the objectives of the Land Use Planning Act and encouraging good land use outcomes. In this particular process, there is not, I suppose, a legal or a legislative requirement or prescription that that has to happen, but it is a consideration for the councillors in making this decision in terms of how this may be perceived.
Councillor Cordova, anything further?
Can I, should I make a contribution, or we're not up to that bit yet?
You can make a contribution. So just to be clear, so the amendment, we're now dealing with the amendment from Councillor Antolli and Councillor Gladright, and effectively the amendment is that a new point D be added, and that's the paragraph there, because the rest of it is the existing motion. So, Councillor Cordova on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. What makes this amendment so egregious is the bold-faced lie that it says elected councillors note and support the community position expressed at the AGM. That there is not a homogenous view among the councillors on this table. So it is completely untrue to say that we all support something that we don't. That's the first thing. The second thing is that there were, what, how many attendees at the AGM? 35? With the 35 attendees at the AGM, there are 40,000 people in Kingborough. So I really don't like this false notion that the people at the AGM spoke for every independent voter, every Greens voter, every Liberal and Labor and every other voter in the municipality. They don't. They didn't. They represent less than a tenth of 1% of the residents in this municipality. And what's really interesting is the agenda item that's coming up next about local government reform. This council is suggesting that an elector poll should have 10% of the population in order to be considered valid. That's something like 4,000 people in Kingborough. And so wouldn't it be interesting if we pass this and say that 35 people get to speak on behalf of all of us, on behalf of every representative that gets elected by the constituents of Kingborough? And yet, in the very next agenda item, we're actually saying, no, it takes 4,000 people to be a representative sample of the opinions of everybody in Kingborough. So there's a massive disjunct there. It is not true to say that we all support it. It's not true to say that everybody in the community supports the position that was outlined at the AGM. It's fundamentally undemocratic to suggest that 35 people speak on behalf of 40,000, particularly when we have this democracy in which representatives from all different political persuasions are voted in based on a plethora of viewpoints. We are not a homogenous group of people who all believe in the same thing based on the very loud voices that were in that AGM, those 35 people. And I'll remind us all that that's less than 0.1% of the population of the residents of this municipality. It's unfair, it's untrue, and that's why this amendment, I think, is it's egregious, and it's just misleading to try and put words into the mouth of every elected official around this table and every resident of Kingborough to say that they support something that they didn't. It's unfair, it's untrue, and it should be scrapped.
Councillor Cordova, thank you very much. Councillor Antolli with a question.
Thank you. I've got a couple. So it doesn't actually say in the amendment all elected councillors note and support, does it, Mayor?
Sorry, just finding the words.
Number D.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to see it.
It doesn't say all elected councillors.
No, it just says elected councillors.
And is it correct that we can pass things based on simple majority?
Correct.
Thank you, Mayor.
Further contributions on the amendment? Councillor Dean.
I do wonder that whether there is a conflict between the 3 and D, because it is asking to support the community position, which is to change the zones. I just don't think that D aligns with A, B and C. More than happy for a separate communication to be provided. That's not an issue whatsoever. But I just don't think they align, because it says outlining the elected councillors note, and I would say that it is a fair inference that elected councillors who are we, noting that there are some that don't support it, I don't think it's a correct representation. If you removed and support I'd be more than happy for it to be noted, because that's what we're here to do, is note the AGM, and also to write to the Commission in addition, which is, I think, the main aim of the amendment.
Okay, so I've heard now from a couple of councillors that there is some issues with the words "and support the community position." So it is up to anybody here who would like to foreshadow another amendment should this amendment not succeed. Are there any further discussions on this amendment? No?
I'd be happy to foreshadow an amendment removing "and support."
Okay. All right. Councillor Antoli, did you want to close debate on the amendment? Is that a thinking face?
Yes.
Okay. Just clarify.
I'm not frozen in time. Look, I mean, if people have a better amendment, I'm happy for them to speak. If they have an amendment to make to improve it, I'm happy for them to speak up so we can improve it. For me, it's important that we show that the community did make a unanimous representation. And, of course, there weren't 40,000 people in the room. There never is. There never will be on any AGM. It was a well-attended AGM. And the people that are affected by LCZ are pretty much rural residents. And they're upset that they're not heard. So I think it's important that they be heard. The recommendation as it was originally written doesn't allow for the TPC to have something official from us to say they're heard and we want you to know that we've heard them. And I thought support was the right word. If people feel that there's a better word to get the inference, get the information there in front of the TPC, that we've met with the community and they've told us unanimously this is their preferred model, while still in with the other hand in balance looking at the technical advice, I think it is the right thing to do. The only problem I had was the as was originally written, it doesn't present that.
Okay. The Deputy Mayor indicated a moment ago that she would be happy to for the words "and support" to come out. Would you be happy with that if that was a way forward to get this through?
Yeah, you could probably do it. And note the community position.
Let the councillors note the community position expressed.
Some of us support it, some of us don't.
Because that then seems to reflect the conversation that I'm hearing around the table and would also facilitate that communication going to the TPC. I'm trying to find a way for this to get through. That might be the most effective way.
Yep.
So if that's acceptable to you, Councillor Antoli,
it's acceptable because politics is about mathematics and I would like an outcome than none.
And it's acceptable, obviously, to you, Councillor Gladright, because you suggested it. So if we remove that, yep, thank you. Mrs Morton's already ahead of the game. She's removed those words. So this is now without those. So it's now a separate communication be provided to the TPC outlining that elected councillors note the community position expressed at the AGM regarding zoning outcomes while acknowledging that final recommendations must be informed by qualified planning advice and statutory criteria. So that, just to be clear, that is the amendment that we're now voting on. Okay. You've kind of summed up. Do you want to say anything else,
no.
Councillor Antoli? Thank you. All right. I'm going to put the amendment as printed on the screen. So it's effectively adding a Part D, which I've just read out, and Parts A, B and C would still be part of the motion. All those in favour of the amendment?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Okay.
You didn't get to speak to you.
Well, it is now. Yeah, I've got to now put it as the substantive motion. You can speak if you want to, but I would never stifle debate. We are a very tolerant council when it comes to participation by all. So we are now on the substantive motion, and this is now the substantive motion. And if my notes serve me correctly, I believe on the substantive motion that we've had Councillor Cordover and Councillor Antoli who have spoken.
No, I have a question.
Okay, but you'll have to hold it because the Deputy Mayor has indicated she would like to speak on the substantive motion, and then I'll come to you on a question. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So I just want to thank the movers of the motion, and I think your motions do add additional weight to your advocacy, so thank you for bringing those, and I do hope that you feel like you are being heard. I acknowledge that council staff have had a very difficult time with this process. They've had two zones which are both problematic when you're translating environmental living or rural resource. You've got landscape conservation on the one hand, which becomes more constrained, and then you've got rural living on the other hand, which also has its own problems. It allows permitted uses like abattoirs and petrol stations and those sorts of permitted uses, which I think I can see you're laughing at me, but if you can imagine that something like that was proposed next door, that you would also be unhappy. So the point is that both of the options are problematic, and so staff have had a difficult time. I commend the council staff who have come up with the bush and coastal living zone to address some of those issues. I think that should be said, but unfortunately due to insufficient consultation timeframes, that's no longer available to us. So we're stuck with the two kind of tricky situations. We are being asked by these motions to intervene in a process in our capacity as the planning authority, and as it is noted in the report and as it has been mentioned, the motions do not address or satisfy the statutory criteria, and it would not be accompanied by qualified advice. So councillors, we're not bound to follow expert advice, but what we are bound to do is to properly consider it. So when qualified advice is ignored and without sound planning reasons, it does raise a serious question about whether the planning authority has fulfilled its legal and ethical duties. So I do support this recommendation as it is up there on the screen. But I also just wanted to say that please understand that councillors have truly heard the concerns of the community, and that sometimes it's not always apparent. Our advocacy for you isn't always on show at these council meetings. We often are advocating on behalf of the community in our workshops or in our one-to-one meetings with the executive team, or even just when we meet each other in the halls and we talk. So there is a lot of advocacy that is going on behalf of the community by the councillors that you don't necessarily always see. So I just wanted to say that as well. And I would also really like to applaud Alison Rogers in resetting the tone of the advocacy that's coming out of the community. And I would also like to applaud the new group, Kingborough Land Users Body. I think that's a really great tool for resetting the tone. It will allow some more collaborative interaction, and I think that's really what we need here. We need more respectful conversations, the ability to be able to talk things through. So I really commend you on that. So, yeah, let's keep working together and let's keep the conversation respectful, and let's try and balance out those environmental and living considerations. So I support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Glodwright. Councillor Cordova, you had a question.
Thank you, Mayor. The question relates to the risk. So 8.1, my reading of the motion as it stands is that it's completely innocuous. The addition of D doesn't... my reading is that the addition of D does not increase risk to us as a council or a planning authority being seen as biased or prejudiced one iota. That's my reading, but I'm just seeking an expert opinion from staff as to do they agree with that, that there's no extra risk inherent in adding in the motion as it stands currently?
Ms. Chikuti.
Through you, Mayor, no, I don't think so. It is communicating the motion that was put forward, or the motions put forward at the AGM, to be on the record for the Planning Commission.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further contributions on the substantive motion? Okay, Councillor Antoli, did you want to... no, not Councillor Antoli. Who moved the original motion?
I moved the amendment.
Yeah, I think it was Councillor Cordova. Yeah, Councillor Cordova, did you want to close debate?
Very briefly, thank you, Mayor. It's been a fruitful and exciting conversation. I think we are going to let the TPC know what they already knew, which is that we're noting what happened at the AGM, which I think everybody did already note. But sometimes it's important to say what you're going to say and then say that you said it as well. So I think we're definitely crossing our T's and dotting all our I's. And I commend the motion. Look, this is part of an iterative process where we're trying to, as I think the Deputy Mayor said it so well, that we are trying to collaborate in a spirit of goodwill. It is not easy. It's going to be fraught. There will always be people who are disappointed. And we all, as representatives, are just doing our very best. We have very different approaches of how we're going to get to that, you know, better community outcomes. But we're all trying our best, and the community is too. So, look, if we can maintain that that tenor of debate, and hopefully we can get some really good outcomes for people. Thanks very much for everybody's contribution today.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I'm going to put the motion. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Takes us now to... Sorry, I have a page here. Page 44, item 15.3, audit of delegations with a recommendation on page 45. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Street, is that a desire to move that?
No.
Okay.
I'm wondering if I can make a personal explanation, Mayor, before the motion is moved.
Sure. Councillor Street on with an explanation.
I need to apologise to the remainder of the meeting and depart.
Okay.
My two-year-old son's injured himself.
Okay.
He's
sure.
Currently having an X-ray, so I'm going to go and meet him, if that is okay.
I hope all is well.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now, I was looking for a mover and a seconder. That's right. He didn't want to do it because he's leaving. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of this report is to respond to the motion from the 2025 AGM. The recommendation is that the proposal for a review of delegated powers be referred to the Council's audit panel for consideration. No risks were identified in relation to that proposal, and so I think taking the motion as read, I'm very comfortable to support this motion. And thank you to the people at the AGM who put that forward, and we'll be pleased to action it, I hope. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Yes, likewise, happy to support it. As a member of the audit panel, I definitely think this is the right advice and course of action, and they're pretty robust about looking at these things without fear or favour, so being an independent body as they are, so I support it as well.
Thank you. Further contributions? No, Councillor Cordova, wish to close debate. I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 46, draft electoral reforms bill with a recommendation on page 53. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're doing all the heavy lifting tonight.
Thank you, Mayor. Somebody, happy to help. Always
feel free to put your hands up anyone and move motions. Councillor Cordova.
So this was the subject of a lengthy council workshop at which there was a lot of robust discussion, which was good. There are some areas that you'll see within the report where the council position is to agree with the recommendations, and others where the council position is to take a different view. So some are supported, some are not, and some say more detail required. Rather than litigating each one individually, I think I will just thank the author and the authoriser. As a result of the workshop, I'm comfortable with where we landed, though I recognise that there were some spots of disagreement throughout. But I think this is a good step forward, and I hope that we put our position to the state government. I look forward to the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova, any further discussion? Look, I just wanted to just add just a comment in relation to this. Obviously, in our previous submission, in the first consultation that the state government did on this bill, we provided our positions as outlined in this paper. A number of the positions we did support. However, the one that does cause me some significant concern is the proposal to have the position of Deputy Mayor not democratically elected but elected around the table, and under the proposed legislation that has to occur at the first council meeting of the new council. And if I think back to, in fact, if all of us think back to just over 3 years ago, we had 4 out of 10 new councillors and we didn't all know one another, and then we're being asked to make a judgment based on how little we know about who should actually take on the role of deputy mayor. I know that one of the arguments being put forward is that this is how it works in other states and so it must be okay. The problem I want to know is what is the problem they're trying to fix down here, because it seems to be working well and it gives the community an opportunity to have input into who would be the deputy mayor. Under this proposal, I also have concerns that it would lead to deals being done around the table. Will you support me for deputy mayor and then I'll support you on X, Y and Z? I don't think it's healthy for the democracy, and I see the community, I think that the community do see the position of deputy mayor as an important one, and one as someone who is, if you like, if anything untowards happens to the mayor, then if it's within 6 months of an election, the deputy mayor automatically takes over rather than a by-election being held. So, in effect, the deputy mayor is the mayor in waiting. I recall last year having a conversation with somebody from, I think it was a local government in New South Wales, and they have a bizarre situation there where the deputy mayor is elected round the table every year, and so you're only deputy mayor for 1 year. So you just get your feet under the table and then somebody else has a go. So I don't support this. The only rationale, apart from everywhere else does it, so it must be right, the only other rationale that the state government has put forward is that it will be a cost saving of around $289,000 collectively to councils in Tasmania, so spread across the 29. I don't think that it is... it's not going to result in a huge amount of saving for us, and I think it takes it out of the hands of the community. So I feel very strongly about this. Interestingly enough, the majority of councils that responded to the Local Government Association request for position statements on this feel the same as well, and yet the state government went against the advice being provided to the sector and have decided to stick with this as an outcome. So I think that's very, very disappointing, and I would hope that if collectively the councils all do put our position very clearly, that once the legislation does come into Parliament, which it will do, I understand, in one of the first sessions this year, because they want to get this into place by the end of the year, I would hope that if not before the legislation gets into Parliament, that the draft bill is amended to remove this provision, or that common sense will prevail on the floor of the chamber and that is removed. So clearly I'm very passionate about this, but I think it's an important one for the way that we work as a council and also for democracy. So I look forward to us putting that very clearly. Councillor Cordova, any further contribution? Okay. I'm going to put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried. We're now at page 66, item 15.5, Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee Community Nominations, with a recommendation on page 67. I'm hoping that Councillor Fox will move it, as I'm unable to from the Chair.
I got distracted because there is a word missing in the last paragraph of the last recommendation. Notes Council continued opposition to changes to the number of electorate signatures. It's just a minor thing, but I was...
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, and now we're
thank
on
you.
Page
I love a good
67
typo.
And I'd be very happy to move the motion.
Thank you. And can I have a
yep.
second? And I've got a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
It's amazing how many people are prepared to put their time and energy into this committee, and a lot of them have got serious disabilities, but there's a certain passion amongst the members of this committee that is remarkable and has always been remarkable throughout the decades, and particularly the people who've been on this for a number of years and want to come back and come back and come back. So it's wonderful, and the fact that we've got more nominations and we've got room, and the recommendation is that we amend the reference to not only allow more members but also to have a smaller quorum, because quite often it's their personal health that stops them coming, or other things like taxis that can't get there on time, or they can't get home by these special taxis. So it's important that if we have a meeting, that we've had three meetings that so far this year, that in the last three meetings we haven't been able to achieve a quorum, and it's so sad. We've just had to have no decisions, just discussion. So I recommend the motion. The people listed here are all fantastic representatives already. The ones below are very keen to be included, and I think it's an important decision for us tonight, and I hope everyone supports it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Fox. If I can just add to that and to provide some clarity, the people listed the members listed 1 to 5 are all existing members of the committee who wish to continue on, and then the others, 6 to 10 of individuals plus the 4 from organisations, would all be new appointees. It's quite unusual for a committee to have such a large turnover, and so we are going to have an induction now that... Hopefully this passes. We will have an induction for the new members so that we can get them up to speed very quickly on the work that the committee does. And like Councillor Fox, I think this was a nice problem to have, because we had a significant number of nominees, and all of them could have been put onto the committee, so we had to make some decisions based on sort of the areas of disability that each person had a lived experience of, because that is very important to us in that committee, and to get a breadth across different forms of disability. And I think we've achieved that with the group that we will have with us, so I look forward to working with them. Is there any further discussion? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. With regards to the names of the individuals who are organisation representatives, is there a way that we can add to this report the organisations they represent?
Yes. So they are actually on they are in the applications that are all, yeah.
And I realise they're in the applications, yep. But for clarity to the community, yep. Maybe in the actual agenda itself.
Yep, we can do that. We'll make that happen. It doesn't have to happen now, but it will happen. Yeah, yep. Thank you. Anything further? Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up? No. Thank you very much. I'll put the motion, moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Thank you very much. Page 89, financial report for December 2025, with a recommendation on page 90. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. The mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So the report tells us that as of the end of December, we are $1.6 million favourable to budgets. However, a lot of this is due to timing-related variances, which will balance off before the end of the financial year. The updated finishing position is now forecast to be $420,000 better than originally budgeted, with the underlying loss of $2.5 million revised to $2.1. So that's good to see. The main driver of the favourable variances is revenue, with planning application fees $295,000 above budget year to date and forecast to be $280,000 at the end of financial year. User fees $218,000 above budget year to date and forecast to be $70,000 by end of financial year. And then we have the interest revenue, which is $143,000 above budget and forecast to be $100,000 at the 30th of June. On the expenditure side of things, we've got employment costs are currently $273,000 under budget. So just a question around this one. Are we expecting this to remain at that or potentially balance off planned financial year, or is it just a wait and see with that one?
Mr. Spence.
Through you, Mayor. We're about to do a bit of a deeper dive into the variances and... get into a little bit more detail. I would expect on the salaries and wages we would be favourable to budget, because we do have a number of vacant positions and have had for most of the year.
Councillor Bain, sorry.
Thank you. And just a question around
We have one of the significant loans of $9.4 million finishing on the 19th of Feb and needing refinancing. With our cash balances as they are at the moment, is there any plans to retire some of the debt before we refinance?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Mayor. This came up in the audit panel in December. We're about to sit down and have a look at our cash flow forecasts. It certainly is a fact that our cash balances are a little bit higher than we thought. I am mindful, though, that this year's capital works program is larger than normal, so I'm probably expecting those balances to wind back a little bit. But my feeling at the moment is there may be an opportunity to retire some of that debt, certainly not all of it. But as I say, we'll be sitting down fairly soon just to sort of map that out a little bit further. And in fact, I was contacted today by Tascorp just seeking our initial intentions as well. So, but we'll sit down and map it out soon.
Councillor Bain. Anything further? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just through the financial report, I noticed there was quite a high number of consultancy services. If I could just get an explanation and understanding of that, please. Across lots of different areas, I noticed.
Spinks.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, probably difficult to answer off the top of my head, but that is true. There are consultancies right across the business. Probably best that I just sort of take that on notice and provide some information in due course.
And the CEO, please.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I can also add to that. You will have noted that, as Councillor Bain pointed out, that we were underspent to budget for some of the staff lines. In some cases around the business where we've had staff vacancies, we've used consultancy to be able to continue business as usual. So it comes in as a different line within the expenses, and it somewhat nets off against the underspend in the staffing area as well.
Anything further? No. I'm going to put the recommendation moved by Councillor Bain and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 150, appendices, with a recommendation on a page that I don't have listed here. thank you. Looking for a mover. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Any questions on the appendices?
Quick question for you, Mayor, just about the region group meeting on 15th of December
regarding Kingston Plaza Shopping Centre.
Yep.
Is there anything to unpack there? Is it just about their new CEO, or is there something happening with Kingston Plaza?
No, that was they're a new group that have taken over management of Kingston Plaza, as they have all the plazas in, I think there's 12 of them in the state. So they wanted to take the opportunity to come and meet and get some feedback on. They've got a couple of empty spaces at the moment. Any feedback that we wanted to provide on what we thought local residents were interested in having, and really just a good opportunity to touch base, and so that if they have any issues, that they know where to contact, who to contact here at council as well.
Thank you. And so,
What feedback did we provide about what the council thinks would benefit the community?
Well, I did say if they could fit an IKEA or an Aldi, that'd be great. But I think they're off the table. I think we acknowledged that. They're obviously looking for, I think a lot of more food-related businesses. I did suggest to them that something that I've heard the community say many times is they'd love to see Guzman and Gomez down here, and I know Spring Farm Village weren't able to attract them because, unfortunately, they want a drive-through space that they're not able to provide there. But I did suggest to them that I thought that the model that Topalia had gone through with community consultation on what people want to see in a supermarket had been very, very good, and I'd say gold standard in terms of trying to engage with the community to get the best outcome, and that it might be beneficial if they were to go through a similar sort of process, because, what I might want and what we all might want might be completely different. Obviously there are, a different space to Channel Court. They're not seeking to have, retail as such. They're you know, more looking at services or food-related businesses. So, yeah. Anything further on the appendices? No. Okay, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Page 150, notice of motion. There were none. Takes us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and lease of facilities, Kingborough Sports Centre. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Mover, Councillor Midgley. Seconder, Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Thank you very much to those. We had quite a few people in the public gallery, and it's. I always like to acknowledge the people who are left at the very end. So thank you very much for your attendance, because this is now the end of the open session of Council. And thank you to those people who have been watching along at home on YouTube. In accordance with the Council meetings and Council workshops, audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So good evening to everyone, and the open session of Council adjourned at 9 p.m. Thank you very much.